Enzo, that really means a lot, though, that you actually listen to the podcast. It's been a while since I made a full episode, so I appreciate the fact that you actually listen to it, man. I really do.
It was a good listen, bro. You got good spoken word, man. Good
appreciate
shit.
That, man. That means a lot. Bro, like, you know what's so funny? Like, you can tell me anything and compliment me. You can say, hey, Alan, you look good. That outfit looks nice. Like, wow, your muscles look great. Nah, you tell me you listen to one of my podcasts and enjoyed that?
I listen to like six, bro.
That's all you need to do. That's how you get into my pants right there, man.
I'm telling you right now, bro.
Tell me.
I've talked to this guy like just like a good couple 10 minutes and I've listened to the conversation before it. We relate so much, bro, because when same thing, bro. When someone says something about a podcast, bro, I feel so like it's like a tingly feeling inside, bro, that it's like I don't get with anything else.
Yeah. It's a fact.
Well, I mean, you're pouring a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into it.
And you're doing it yourself, you know,
and
bro.
And finally someone goes, hey, good job. You're like, oh, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think I can say that also just because I know what it takes to do one, that we do one. You know what I'm saying? That mm-hmm. to see somebody doing it by themselves and then to how, it's great, bro. I can't, you know. I was like, damn, is this good? Like, I saw your Instagram, but the podcast is like, it's like it's almost like the Instagram's like the little spoon, and then you go get the whole meal with the whole podcast, and like I can't wait till it's on video, bro. So once you get that on video, it's gonna be that next level. But I like to listen to audio sometimes, so it doesn't. I still listen, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. I most of the time I'm listening to podcasts driving now. So if anything, I got a new podcast to listen to. So
I appreciate that.
That shit is fire, bro. I really liked it. And shit, keep going, bro.
God,
keep going.
Enzo, God, what do you want? I got you, man. You want to go out to dinner after this? Shit, you want to go out to dinner after
this?
Nah,
I appreciate you showing up to my podcast, bro. Oh, like, you know what I'm saying? To see our operation, to what we're doing. You know, I'm glad that you're here to share your story. I mean, I don't even know where to begin, bro. We could start poker. We could start the Navy. We could start, you know, like, you being Asian. Or I don't know, whatever you want to go, you know? Or like where men's mental health is, like, because we've had like a plethora of conversations at the shop, like,
oh yeah,
and that's what's, if anything, yeah, like, how did you start going to Caesar?
Yeah,
how'd you find Caesar?
One of my roommates at the time, he was getting cut by Caesar, and then it was like, I think, was it right before the pandemic? It was right before the pandemic that I started getting cut by Caesar, and I'm one of those kind of people where like, if you cut my hair well. And we have a really good conversation. Like, I'm gonna be loyal to you till the day we die.
Yeah, Caesar's that type of guy. He could for sure cut his ass off.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I've only had like maybe like five barbers in the last like 15.
Finding a barber is like finding a relationship.
Bro, I've been more loyal to my barbers than I have to any of my ex-girlfriends. That's for sure. It's like
y'all
not
hear
even.
That?
It's not even close.
Clip it.
It's not
Clip
even
it.
Close.
It's the truth, though. It's the truth.
Like I have. So many regrets with girlfriends that I've 100% stayed loyal to or whatever. I've never had a regret with a barber that I've stayed 100% loyal to.
Facts.
Ever.
Facts.
Ever.
Yeah.
Yo,
you know, the trippy thing, my barbers when I was growing up was like females. So that's what's strange for me. Like, I had female barbers. So I didn't really experience that, like, being
the relationship
loyal
of opening
to,
up.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
bond, yeah.
Not until I became a barber. Like, I was already a teenager by that time. So it was like, but
right.
It's dope to hear that experience that people have. You know what I mean?
Oh, like, yeah. And especially today's day and age where, like, you can't really talk about too many things these days because everybody's looking to be triggered or looking to be offended. All of a sudden, you're in a space where you got a bunch of really cool, honest, present people that are more than happy to speak their mind, more than happy to hear you speak yours without any kind of judgment. And then it's like, wait, I'm not just getting a haircut. I'm around people that I genuinely like being around energetically speaking.
Yeah, it's a moment where you can actually decompress.
I can feel like, 100%. I can honestly say, I don't want to boast or anything, but New Life definitely has that appeal that we can have conversations there that we don't feel like, oh, snap, shut up, or damn, you know what I'm saying? It's like, nah, it's a man's cave, let's talk. Like, no bias, no, let's just talk. Like, I know me and you have had debates in there where we don't see eye to eye and, like, other people too. But it's, like, that's an environment for men, right? I think it's, like, our, what is that thing called? Where, like, the town square where everybody just comes and has that, you know? But for men.
Right.
You know? So, I appreciate that. So, do you feel that New Life has that or?
100%. 100%. And yeah, I think that it's really important for men to have that space where we can all be honest with one another. You and I have had a lot of very, very intimate conversations
for sure.
That I would never post on social media,
Real
that
talk.
I would never, you know.
It's like confidentiality 101 right there.
Exactly. But then we give ourselves the space to understand, like, all right, this is a human situation that Enzo is going through.
Right.
Hey, this is a situation that Alan's going through. And just learn from where we're coming from,
exactly,
in our perspective.
Right. Because, damn, we've definitely had some crazy conversations about women, about shit. Men, mental health, like,
oh yeah,
it's wild, bro. What are some of the things that you've dealt with as a man as of late that you're like, damn?
As of late, oh man, there's a lot. As of
because you late. Got a competition that is coming up, right?
I have a bodybuilding competition. It's the federation's called OCB. It's like a natural bodybuilding competition. And that's in like 7.5 weeks. And
oh, dang.
Yeah, so I'm right here because everybody over here is like eating quesadillas and offering me all these great things.
I got hot Cheetos right here.
Yeah, I'm just hoping I'm hoping one of y'all would just like burp so I could smell it. You know what I mean? Because I'm fucking just craving it.
And he left the plate open just for you to get the aroma.
He did.
He didn't want to
close
it.
You're so cruel, Mauricio. I'm definitely getting the waff of it. But, you know.
You mind me asking, like, mm-hmm. How'd you get into fitness?
How'd I get into fitness? So that's another good story, right?
Yeah.
And let's start there.
Let's lead it up. Because competition, I'm like, all right, but what happened that made you want to get into this competition?
For sure.
Yeah.
Right. So what got me into lifting originally was back in high school. And why I lifted was I was getting ready for football. Mm. But what got me addicted to lifting and what got me into the consistency is that I found out the more I lifted, the more I got these results, the broader my shoulders got, the bigger my arms got, the more that I started gaining respect from people. And it's interesting that we started talking about race because I felt like a lot of my early childhood years was fighting against the Asian rhetoric of being marginalized, being emasculated as a man. And what I realized is the more I built features that were masculine, built features that just brought about self-confidence, that it didn't really matter what you were labeling me as because some of the features that you exhibit far supersede any stereotype. Like, how can you tell a guy that's, like, jacked, oh, yeah, you're not sexually wanted by women? Like,
right, you're jacked.
All right, yeah, bro. Yeah. All right, bro.
They like muscles.
Right. I have, like, a chiseled jawline. I have a deep voice. And
you're small. You're not going to get any bitches.
Like, really, bro? Right, like, you're the one to tell me? You know what I mean? And it's interesting because, and you see that in society too. People that lift automatically have this assumed like masculinity, this assumed respect. And it went from trying to overcome a lot of insecurities, overcome a lot of the stories that I even projected onto myself, to now realizing that, hey, you know, I speak a lot about men's mental health, a lot of emotional health, a lot about overcoming your adversities. And I realized that sometimes it takes an image of health, an image of masculinity to actually get that message across. So now it's what it started as trying to overcome my own insecurities, trying to become a better version of myself, is now becoming, how do I inspire others to do the same? And I've noticed that comes from a space of actually putting in the work of working out, putting in the work of watching what you eat. Because regardless of what anybody says, I don't know of anybody who doesn't want to be in peak physical condition. I don't know of anybody that wants to look in the mirror and be like, oh, I don't want to be the best version of myself. Like, that doesn't happen,
yep.
You know?
Yep.
So that's what really got me into it, and now it's just...
Were you bigger back when you started?
So I weigh right now about 137 pounds or so. Mm. In high school, it's probably in the 150s or 160s. But I had a lot more body fat. You know, I definitely didn't start seeing my abs until my 30s, you know?
Oh, shit.
And
really?
So I actually, I bounced.
Fluctuated.
A lot, yeah. So when I had, like, my second daughter, I think you might know, did you ever get, like, sympathy weight? Did you gain any of that?
No.
Okay,
so I'm mad that I'm like, where's my dad bar, man? Like,
no, so
I let go of an addiction. I thought I was going to get fatter because I let go of the addiction. I'm still the same way. And I'm like, now it's like, that's why I want to stop smoking weed so I can see if that triggers my appetite to come back naturally and just fucking eat good. Or
right.
I don't know, because something's got to give, bro. I got 3 kids and I ain't. So you got body fat from having kids? Or?
Bro, so that's a story of pretty much my fitness. Is like high school, I was in really good shape. And then shortly after, I joined the Navy. Then I got fat again because I was in South Carolina just drinking beers and eating McDonald's. Mm. Got up to like 205 pounds at one point.
Whoa.
And then it's my entire...
I can't imagine that
bro.
You, bro.
It's, I have pictures. I can show
I
you
need
pictures.
To see that,
but bro,
what?
I'll show you after this.
Wow.
But but that's like, I feel like that's what my fitness journey has always been about, has been getting big and then all of a sudden realizing I hit too far of a point, then leaning myself down, and then something got me to the point where I'm lazy again, and then I get big again, and I got some whatever. It wasn't until I started doing competitions where I've actually been able to just stay lean. And even then, even the off season, I gained 20, 25 pounds. And it's more interesting because I'm still insecure. I'm still challenged
battling with that.
Right. But
because you still have the previous image.
Well, not only is it the previous image, but now, you know, for me, every competition, right? Every competition journey, you usually, for me, I trim down about 15 to 20 pounds, right? And when you start seeing yourself looking like an IG model, when you start seeing that you can look like something on a magazine cover,
the ideal that you have in your mind,
you can't let that image go. And it's crazy.
That's crazy. Addicting. Like, you're chasing that always.
So body dysmorphia, right? You guys are aware of it. It's it's where you start having like.
And I'm so upset that Byron's not here, my cousin, because he taught me about that.
Yeah.
Where you look in the mirror, you're like, you don't see the progress, right?
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's so in the general population, right? Body dysmorphia is suffered at a rate of around 10 to 12%, depending on where you ask, right? In the bodybuilding community, body dysmorphia is suffered at a rate of 53%.
Damn, so that's why people keep just going and going and going, because they think it's not growing.
It's not enough.
And that's what's so crazy about it, right? You have these people, what you would think is an ideal physique, but are just fucking going through it. And the average person that suffers through body dysmorphia thinks about their body nonstop at a rate of 5 hours per day, at the very minimum. 5 hours a day obsessing over your body.
Ouch. I don't think I've ever thought about my body that much. In a day.
But that's the thing is, right? So imagine, let's say you, right?
You chased and you've gotten that
it's
thing.
It's chasing the dragon.
Yeah.
But think about it, right?
The
so for you, Enzo, you're talking about the fact that it's been troubling as fuck for you to gain weight, right?
Right.
For me, it was troubling to get down. Mm. Now, all of a sudden, I obtained an image that I've been chasing my entire life. And based off of trying to maintain that, it's difficult because you have to have a certain amount of fat in your diet. You have to have a certain amount of regulation in your hormones, which being this lean, it's very challenging to do. So you have to, for your health and for the regulation of your hormones, get to a point where you're eating a lot more fat again, eating a lot more carbs and everything.
Right.
But naturally, your body's going to tailor off from that image. And so now all of a sudden, think about it. Like, you've gained all of this. You maintain all this discipline to get to this point that you've seeked out for your entire life. And then you got to let it go. Realize it's just temporary. Mm-hmm. And that's what keeps people, like, losing their mind. And I got to tell you, before I even started getting ready for this competition, I was like, holy fuck, I'm fat. Holy fuck, I'm fat. I'm, like, grabbing, like, my body, grabbing this, and this. I'm not fat at all. But because it's relative to what I look like on stage, I can't get over that image that I have on stage. And so now I've accepted that I'm probably going to have some kind of body dysmorphia for the rest of my life. But I think it's better on this end, knowing that I can get to
where you want to get
where
to.
I want to
achieve the ideal that you had.
Correct. Correct.
Damn.
So
that's crazy. I never knew about that. What? I thought that body dysmorphia meant something totally different. Isn't there what's the opposite? What's the answer?
Well, it's because there's different extremes within it, because there's also the guys that want to get bigger, you know.
Mm-hmm. What's the antonym to that word?
The antonym to body dysmorphia?
Yeah, or the because I know there's something else where it's like people that want to like remove them, do something to their body. Is it actually? It might be that word.
It's probably still right. I mean,
yeah, because you're right. You might be right.
Yeah, because the extreme that he's presenting is the extreme of being lean, right?
Right.
That dysmorphia of being lean, but there's also the dysmorphia of building so much muscle.
But that
where there's guys that just want to get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Okay, so now my mind's clicking. Is it connected to people like doing the body implants and surgeries like that too?
Oh yeah, the people that, like, for example, the guys that
put biceps on and
they do calf workouts, but their genes don't allow them to have those big, nice looking calves.
So they
get calf implants.
So that's body dysmorphia too,
right?
Yeah.
Wow. Any
because they want a certain image that their body needs.
So I'm Homer Simpson.
What do you mean you're Homer Simpson?
Because I be looking in
because that's the dad bod he wants.
Nah. I be looking in the mirror sometimes. I'm like, I'm ripped just because I'm skinny and shit.
You know what's so crazy? There's people with permanent dad bods that would kill to
have what I know.
Yeah. And
I mean, I feel like my wife will, you know, she compliments me sometimes. So shout out to her that, you know, I'm not as insecure as I could have been, I feel like, because I've had somebody cheer me on and be like, I love your body. Don't worry about it. And, you know, that makes me feel better just hearing that sometimes. It's like soothing and stuff. So at the end of the day, but there's times where I've had like interactions with other grown men that they try to shame me for being small. And I'm like, bro, I look at the mirror every day, fam. Like, what do you do? What you think? You think this isn't, you know, like, you think you're hurting me with that? But it is what it is, bro. But it's crazy how it's happened recently. And I look at it like, damn, bro. Something wrong with you if you're gonna look at me. Like, damn, bro. Like, that's what we talking about right now.
They're probably jealous if they don't have their body.
I mean, shit.
But
you're right. There are some people that got dad bods that I just want to get, like, at least back. Because when I was in high school, I was in your weight. At 137, 138 was like, when, you know, I think I got to 140 one time, like, maybe junior year. But now, bro, I don't even want to say my weight. It's like, I'm scared. I'm like, damn, bro. Every time I go on the weight, I'm like, it lingers from, like, you know, like, if I haven't taken a dump, it's this. You know what I'm saying? But I'm like, damn. And I feel like I was heavier when I was popping pills. And I think it's because I was hella constipated. Like, I was just, you know, eating shit and just, like, just always feeling like I was hella constipated when I was popping pills. So now that I'm actually able to take a dookie, like, I swear, bro, like, I feel like I've lost even more weight. And the doctor said, like, the doctor told me the last time I went that for my height, it's okay. Mm-hmm. But I definitely want to get to your body weight, bro. Where I look at like, Ryan Garcia. He's like, he fights at 135, 136. I'm like, that's my weight. That's my weight class. I should be out there with him, you know?
Right.
And I'm like, fuck. 15 more pounds. Like, nah. Like,
let me introduce a thought to you, right? Because I feel like that's one of the misconceptions that a lot of people have with regards to their body is they always associate their body with the number. They always associate with the weight, with the body fat percentage. One of the biggest things that's helped for me to go through this transformation is view my body and view myself as a matter of habits. So I'm not 136, 137 pounds. I'm a person who works out 5 times a week, who eats 5 to 6 meals a day, and all of those meals are geared towards performing with that workout.
Right.
So I'm not 136 pounds. I'm a person who works out 5 times a week and with a very concentrated goal. And I think that that's where people need to get to. It's like,
you just break it down into like,
so like, exactly. So you are at your weight because of your habits. Mm-hmm. You are where you're at because of what you eat. You're not your weight just because of a number. No. You are a byproduct of your own actions or inaction in that dynamic.
Right. And that to me has been the hardest part.
Okay.
Because I started working out last year.
Okay.
So last year I was weighing like, what was it, more like 320? Right?
Yeah, something like that.
320 when I first started.
Okay.
So I was weighing 320. Right now I'm down to 290.
Hell yeah, right? Dude.
So, but that's the thing is that I've been fluctuating, right? Like now I'm at a point where I'm just fluctuating between like 288. Sometimes I go back up to like 295. And but the thing is that it bugs me that I'm not seeing the number go down, you know? But at the same time, I look at my clothes and I'm like, but I do feel that my clothes feel, you know, looser. So I'm like, okay, I feel it in my clothes, even though the number that I'm seeing isn't the number I want to see, you know? Because my long-term goal is to try to get to like 180, 170, you know?
That's beautiful, bro. Damn.
But it's hard.
I never heard you say
that. Number thing is really hard because it messes with your mind. Because you get on the scale and you're like, oh, damn, like I'm still here.
Right.
And this year, like, I changed my workouts because I used to work out with them at night. But the issue was that since I was working out at night, I would get too much energy after my workouts. And, you know, I wouldn't sleep till later on during the day. So now I'm working out in the mornings. So I'm just doing 4 days, you know, Tuesday through Friday. And basically going from 5:30 to 6:30. You know, I've been doing that, you know, since the second week of January. So I'm doing that, but at the same time, that number messes with you.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like, there's weeks where, like, I get down, like I said, to, like, 288, 286. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going down. Then the next week's like, all right, I'm back to, like, 292. I'm like, what? Mm-hmm. And then it's like, it goes down again. And I'm like, man, like, I need to see this go lower.
Yeah, but yeah.
It's like what you're saying, the habits, right?
It's the habits, yeah. Right. And that's what it is. It's like if you feel like what you're doing is correct and how your mindset travels with it, and how you feel is feeling great, then that those are things that you should be pushing for. Because I've seen too many people look at a scale, drop everything that they eat, and all of a sudden suffering, but they lost 20 pounds, mm-hmm. right? And the, what, I think the percentage of diets failing is like 95%.
Yeah.
It's because people focus so much on the scale, they don't even realize why they're doing it, right? Mm-hmm. One of, I remember when I used to work with clients all the time, and I don't right now just because I have a lot of impatience with people, especially when I'm getting ready for competition. Mm-hmm. But one of the most common questions I used to ask is like, all right, so what are your goals? Like, all right, I want to lose 20 pounds. It's like, all right, well, is it the 20 pounds that you want to lose, or is it the lifestyle you can gain with what you identify as a 20-pound less version of yourself? And then it's like,
That is deep. Mm-hmm. That is
and then think about it. Then it's like, then you realize it actually was never about the weight. It's about the lifestyle that you think you're holding yourself from because you're heavier.
Yeah. And I agree with that because also, too, like, I don't believe in diets because that's, I believe more in moderation, you know, and that's what I've been doing. Like, for example, I cut because I knew how to cut sugar out of my life because I used to drink too much soda. And that was one of the things. The first thing I did, I think that's the only thing where I was very strict on myself in diet wise was what I drink. And I was like, all right, cut off all soda. We're only going to drink water. And like once in a while, I'll be like, all right, I'll have a little bit of sugar drink. That's okay. You know, but it's like, let's stay consistent with the water. And that's what I've been doing. I haven't had soda in a year already.
Wow.
So, but when it comes to food, I've been like, all right, I got to have a little bit less of this. I got to do this, you know. The hard part is when you eat out, always.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
It's always been the hard part. But, yeah, that's where I'm seeing that. Like, I'm like, and I've seen other people, like, either coworkers of mine where they're like, you know, how do you do it? Like, they want to go on a strict diet. And I'm like, yeah, it's strict diets. Like, I don't believe in them because I'm like, I've seen that. When you deprive yourself from something, your mind is only going to think of what you're depriving yourself from.
Right.
However, if you let your mind know, like, okay, like, you can choose not to have this or you could choose to have a little bit less of this.
Mm-hmm.
Then your mind understands, like, it's an option, but do I really need it or do I really want it? It's different from, I can't eat this.
Right.
I guess I'm on a weed diet then. Like the weed diet that you're describing though, where it's moderation, where I'm like, do I need this or do I not? Because I have like a reward scale with weed where it's like, I'll reward myself with smoke. But
yeah.
I feel like it's been making me unproductive with like goals like hitting the gym and doing waking up early and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it's like, that's what I battle with. But that's crazy that, you know,
but also to the lifestyle thing, it's a very great point of view that you're saying.
Yeah,
because that's the reason I started it. I started because I wanted to get healthy.
Hell yeah.
I didn't start it just because like, oh, I want to lose weight. I started it because I'm like, all right, I know I'm too big and I don't want to get into my later years and be this big. You know, that's the mentality. And I've also noticed the difference of like when I work out in the morning. For example, today I didn't work out. I'm starting my week tomorrow. So I noticed that, like, I'm, like, more crankier in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
When I done, like, I haven't gone to the gym, a little crankier. I'm like, But the days that I go in the morning, I get my workout in. I feel like my mental state is different. Like, I feel like it's a decompression before the day begins.
Oh, yeah.
And then I have that energy to push me through my regular day. It's a whole different way. And I'm like, I notice those benefits. I'm like, it is different to like, just, you know, go enjoy your workout. Like,
what times do you work out?
I work out like 5 a.m, 6 a.m. A lot of my transformation, I love that you brought up the fact that you work out in the mornings. So my initial transformation, this is my third competition, right? What got me into my very first competition was my very first transformation. And shameless, no shame plug, whatever, but I'm writing a documentary series talking about this specific transformation. And I literally started at about 173 pounds and within about 6 months competed at 135, 134.
Damn.
But the main catalyst, in my opinion, for that is doing fasted workouts, fasted cardio. It's because some studies have shown that if you work out in a fasted state, that your body actually burns 3 times more fat than it does if you were to work out fed. And on top of that, when you are working out in the AM, your cortisol levels are different. So the body composition change that you present your body with by working out in a fasted state in the morning is so like different than if you just decided to wait until the afternoon and work out fed.
And that's the other thing. I used to think like, oh, if I'm gonna work out in the morning, when I wake up, I'm gonna get hungry, you know? Because I'm a breakfast person.
Oh, yeah.
I love breakfast. Yeah. So I used to think that like, I'm gonna wake up, I'm gonna be too hungry. Like, I'm gonna wanna eat before going to the gym. But I've been doing exactly what you said. I go and I don't feel hungry. I just need the water. That's fine. And yeah, it's different. Your body feels different as you're like you're working out without having food in you.
Right.
And then I usually don't eat until like 9 a.m.
No, it's crazy. You know? I just saw recently an old video of Conor McGregor.
Mm-hmm.
He was running and I think he was still in featherweight. He said that. He's like, something about running when I'm hungry, it just makes it like it's more motivation too. You know what I mean? Because you're hungry. So it's a different feeling on your body and all that type of stuff. So.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
As of lately, like before I go to the gym, I try not to eat either, just because it feels different going on like you could say a full stomach than you know going on an empty stomach type of thing.
Yeah.
But the thing also too about working out is like let's say you're done after a gym workout, your body kind of requires energy too.
Oh yeah.
So you want to eat, and then they also say that you don't want to eat 4 hours before you go to sleep. That's what I've heard. I don't know. What would you say about that?
I would say it just all depends on where you are with, it just sound like every other Instagram or whatever person, but it all depends on your macros, right? If you haven't met your protein goals for the day, then yeah, you should probably be eating your protein goals. Right. But it also depends on what your goals are, right? So for me, initially, I was trying to cut down. And so I did a lot of fasted workouts, fasted this, fasted that. Now I'm at a point where I'm trying to develop the most muscle while you know, maintaining the lowest percentage body fat as possible. So now it's all about performance, not about composition. And it's interesting on all depends on what your goals are. But I would say there you can never do anything wrong with getting the right amount of protein in no matter what. Because like not only does protein like feed your muscles and it helps just keep your body satiated, but I mean, even when you're not working out, it takes energy to maintain the muscle that you did develop. And that in and of itself burns calories. And that in and of itself needs a certain amount of macros to maintain.
Question. When it goes into competitions, what made you like be like, all right, I want to compete. But what are you competing? What is the essence of that fitness?
I love that question. So that's different for everybody. For me, It originally started with me trying to hold myself accountable. You know, when I met you and a few years ago, I was a full-on degenerate, poker-playing, alcoholic, partying, substances, women, 24/7, it didn't matter. And a few years ago, I actually found my adoption paperwork from when I went into foster care. So I was adopted, I went into foster care when I was 5. And I started reading all of the notes from the therapist. And it was crazy because it went into a lot of the traumas that I experienced as a kid. And it detailed all the behaviors, the triggers, the tantrums. And I was reading it. This was a few years ago. I looked at it. I'm like, that shit still exists right now.
Damn.
That shit still, the feeling of being abandoned, the feeling of not belonging, and the feeling of not being enough. And it's like, if I were to really reflect on my life and a lot of the motives that got me to where I'm at today, it's fighting against that feeling of not being enough. So when I do these competitions, I've always wanted to do them. I think a lot of that has to do with the programming as a kid, earning like, oh, this guy gets respect. This guy actually is masculine. It started out as that. But now it's realizing is just constantly overcoming this inner insatiable feeling of being enough. And it's just constantly proving to myself that I can be enough, that I can be enough, and I can be enough. You know, and like the first competition I did was just to see if I was good enough to compete. And then as soon as I got to that level, then it was like, well, let's see if I can get good enough to win. During my second competition, though, I almost lost my dad to cancer. And so what started originally as me trying to...
Your adopted father?
My adopted father, uh-huh. Yeah. And the man that raised me. And it went from me trying to win to me even trying to find the willpower to get to the gym.
Get through that because it was like on the side. Is this...
Very much so. And now that this third competition, I've taken a whole year off. I've taken a train. I mean, I could show you pictures on just like... We're talking about like weight and everything on why we shouldn't. So if you look at these pictures,
Yeah, I saw that you posted that.
This is the same exact weight. Same exact weight on the scale. Actually off by maybe 2 or 3 pounds.
So that's what you compete. That the how chiseled you are in and like how ripped you could get your bicep and stuff like that, or is
right,
that
but what, it's but it that's on the surface. On the inner, right? It's
your competition, your inner your you know
it's how can I achieve a better version of myself? Mm. How do I hold myself accountable to a higher standard than I'm holding myself to now? And what I have found is that by pursuing the higher version of myself, that I show up way more confidently. I show up way more assertively. My relationships have been better. My finances have been better. My business and everything else has just been so much better, because once you start pursuing your passions indiscriminately and making it a priority, you, by default, are making yourself a priority. You are having standards for yourself. And now it's just like, that energy perpetuates in everything else in your life. And it's in that feeling of constantly being better and seeing that improvement. It's what I'm addicted to. And so like, this might be this competition, right? And as soon as I win, because I feel like it's inevitable, then it's like, what's next? What's next? Because always finding that better version, better version, better version. Damn. And it's just that journey, man.
What would be the next version of this one? If this is not the catalyst, was there another one?
Well, we'll see what happens. You know, for me, I started competing and all of a sudden started podcasting and then started talking about men's health, because I started realizing that a lot of how we approach our bodies and a lot of how we approach our fitness is a direct reflection of how we approach ourselves in its entirety, you know?
Yeah, what we think of ourselves, what is the idea that we have of ourselves, if we love ourselves, don't love ourselves, it's all reflected there.
Exactly, exactly. And before this whole competition, you know, began, it literally started with me waking up from a hangover from the night before. Like, I remember I went to a poker game, partying my ass off. All of a sudden, it's 9 p.m. the next day. I have a girl next to me, don't remember how she came home. I'm drunk as fuck, having to call out of work. And I'm like, dude, what the fuck am I doing? Mm. Like, what am I doing?
So you had an epiphany at that moment.
I took a picture of myself and I was like, yo, I am never fucking looking like this again. Now, mind you, during that journey, kind of a lot of what you said, your path isn't always linear. It's not just mm-hmm. like the straight drop. It's like this boom, you know, this mm-hmm. avalanche. And then it's like a stock market, you know, curve effectively. But in those journeys and in those battles, you learn so much about yourself, you know. And then there's obviously the times where I reach a plateau where I'm not seeing the scale move, or I'm not seeing the picture move. And I'm like, man, maybe I should quit. Maybe I should not. But then finding that inner battle, finding that inner thing that, like, man.
And that's the thing where you, like, for example, for me, it's I always think of, like, all right, just remember last year, right? And I think of, like, the first few months you didn't see anything. You saw it until 3 months in, 4 months in, you know? Like, and I just picture that. Like, all right, you're not seeing the scale move right now, but it's like, keep working at it. Keep working at it. You're gonna end up seeing the results eventually,
right?
You know, and it's that progress and it's that mentality
mm-hmm.
that it is difficult. It is difficult to like wake up at 5 and be like, all right. Like, there's been days where I have to hype myself as I'm going to sleep. Like, hey, tomorrow you're gonna hit the gym.
All right,
like,
let's
and I start doing my walkthrough. These are the workouts you're going to do.
Oh, yeah.
All right, tomorrow you're hitting back. All right, these are the workouts you're doing. And I'm doing, like, I'm picturing, like, this is how I'm going to do it. I'm going to use this machine, do this. And I'm already hyping myself. So then when I wake up, it's like, oh, yeah, I already did my walkthrough. I already know I'm going to the gym. Da-da-da. And there's times where I don't do that, and it's a little harder to wake up the next morning. Because you're like, I wake up, but then it's like, damn, it's 5. And it's like, no, I can't quit. Like, I gotta get going.
Right.
Like, yeah, it's a lot of mental game.
Yeah.
A lot of mental game.
I was gonna ask you, what do you think about, like, let's stir the pot with one of those people that you believe you have to go to the gym to get your fitness on? Or
do I believe I have to go to the fitness? Or do I have to go to the gym to get my fitness on? What do you mean? What do you mean by that?
Like, you know how people are like, they either have dumbbells at home, they got, mm-hmm. you know, the resistant bands at home. People have stuff at home, a little at home workout.
Right.
Or do you feel like the best workout you can get is at the gym? Or do you feel like I do calisthenics and I'll get the same, you know, results?
Right.
Are you that person that believes you only have to go to the gym? So I've had that debate with people.
Yeah, well, to get to the results that I need or that I want to, I can do a million and three different dumbbells. I could do calisthenics, whatever. It just takes a lot. It takes a lot more effort and a lot more concentrated effort that I'd have to research into to get to that. And so it's just easier to...
Because the machines are already designed to help you get there faster.
Well, not exactly in per se, right? But I'm saying that like a lot of the movements that come with that... A lot of the movements and the weighted movements that a gym can present isn't exactly afforded in a living room with just dumbbells or with just calisthenics and stretching. Like, you know, in order for me to build a substantial chest to get up on stage, I need at least a certain 100 pounds or something of resistance to have it fight against in order for it to grow.
Right. And I can't, especially for competition. For fitness, not per se, but for competition, you would need the gym then.
Right. But I'm going to say this, though, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever helps you get to your goal and helps you stay consistent, do it. Mm-hmm. You know, because, like, maybe you don't want to compete. Maybe you don't want to get up on stage. And, yeah, maybe the gym going to 24-hour or going to gold isn't exactly for you. Mm-hmm. Right? But let's say you just want to get into a moderate shape or whatever. Then, yeah, do something that you enjoy. Do something that you're happy with. Because everyone's body goals and everybody as what they view as being fit is all different for everybody.
Right.
So, but for me and my specific goals, yeah, I do feel like I need the gym. I feel like I need bigger dumbbells and bigger weights. And I hate to sound like a meathead, I need more weights. But it's true.
No, but it's I don't know. It's kind of a happy emotion. Like,
yes.
To know where you started, you know, like. When I started with this guy, I remember the first time we hit the bench, I could barely do the bar. And that's 45 pounds, you know, and I was struggling with the bar. And then it's like, as the progression goes, it's like, all right, let's add fives. And then you're struggling with the fives. All right, let's add tens, and you're struggling with the tens. Let's do 25, 35s. And that's, you know, once you get there, you're like, whoa, like, you're seeing that journey of, like, I started here. I couldn't even lift this. Now you do the bar, and you're like, this is nothing.
Yeah.
You know? So that's the interesting thing. Like, and also, I don't know. It's exciting. Yeah.
It is.
Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Where do I see myself in 5 years? Man, that's a great question. I love these questions, Enzo. I really do. Where do I see myself in 5 years? Well, I've realized that by letting go of a destination and just focusing on an intention and let life play out as it goes, that I end up finding myself right where I need to be. Mm. You know, so right now, for example, like I said, I started the podcast. Now I'm on a weekly show every Wednesday. And the show is called Subculture Live. And I'm a co-host and talk about natural bodybuilding. But I, you know, if you were to tell me 5 years prior, I would have never envisioned that at all. And I would have had, I'm going to be doing this, this, and this. But then it's like, breaking down why this, and this means something to me. And I realize what I really just want to do is to continue influencing and inspiring people to be better versions of themselves, inspiring people to work out more and lift, especially in a culture where obesity and being fat is just excessive at this point. You know,
Lizzo was celebrated.
Bro, and that's the thing is, but
is that wrong? Did I say that? Am I going to get canceled?
No, it's true. Well, no, it's funny because like women are appreciated for no matter what size they are, but men aren't.
Yeah, no.
Men are
more. I've yet to meet a girl that looks at a guy that's 300 pounds and be like, yeah, that's the chubby guy I want.
Well, you know? Well, I beg to differ. There are some girls that I know that be like, I want a big guy to cuddle with, and then like,
no, there's a difference between a dad bod cuddling.
No. Like I've heard, like, there was this one girl I knew that would be like, I want my gordito and all this. And I'm like, what? I never heard a girl like talk like that. But she was like, and then she'll put like a, like, it was funny. One time it was like a hairy ass. I don't know. It's like a meme or something. It's like a hairy ass and a girl's on like right on the legs of the hairy ass. I was like, what? And then she's like, I want my gordito. And I'm like, why would you put a hairy ass though? Like, I guess, but I mean, I don't know. I feel like fitness is important.
No, it definitely
and
is.
It definitely I've is. Never been somebody that's been, I've never gained more than 150 pounds. So I can't be like, damn, I've lost so much weight, but I definitely want to be like, damn, I want to look better, you know, just to be like, I did that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, I don't know about competing though.
There's one thing that Maury said, one of the fighters. Maury, remind me where you said one of the... Connor, I'm trying to remember. of taking their body to the best fitness. What was that fighter said?
Oh, it was Matt Brown.
There you go.
He was like, it's a shame for like a man to never be able to get to see his peak form of his body.
Is that the Instagram, the social media thing or whatever I've seen? Or you're just saying that in general?
I saw a UFC fighter say that. Like, okay. I guess he posted it. It might have been from someone else, but okay. He was posting this Matt Brown. He was talking about how basically... Yeah, that it's a shame and a disappointment as a man if you don't ever get to a top physique prime,
ever in your lifetime.
You never see of yourself and whatnot. And like I saw that and it really hit me because
hit me when he told me that too.
Because honestly, dude, I watch UFC basically every weekend, mm-hmm. and these guys have amazing bodies and all this type of stuff. You know what I mean? So
you haven't seen a butterbean in the UFC at least.
I have. They're usually a heavyweight.
Yeah.
Or they missed weight and you know they're heavier
but they're
going up in a weight class so they look a little heavier.
I've seen it, but at the same time, I can see his like little
what I'm
definition.
Trying to say though is that I admire like no homo or nothing like that, but I admire it so much that I'm like I want to see my
pause
body like
now,
that at
bro.
Some
it's
point.
Pause now.
Well, yeah, no, it's interesting because I just read a stat where it's like it's easier to become a millionaire in America than it is to have a six pack. So it's like
I was gonna say something about that.
So it's like I think it's 9% of all households in America have someone that's a millionaire, and then it's like 2% of the entire global population has a visible six pack.
It's because I feel like they've put more importance in monetary gain than body physique now. It's like back then it was the hunter gatherer, the buffest guy, you know.
Nah, but
like
all that also has to do, I think, with the nutrition. You know, our nutrition has changed
that too.
A lot. And also by...
But that's the monetary gain that they get. They're feeding
bullshit. But
that also
has to do with social classes, right? If you're poor, the food you have access to when you're poor, it's fast food, something quick. It's cheaper to buy your family a McDonald's meal than it is to go to the grocery store and buy an actual meal for someone.
All right, so that's what's so interesting, right? That's a narrative.
It is
I hear
a narrative.
That's a narrative, yep. But like... So for example,
until you have a family, you're going to know.
Well, no.
I pay for food in my household,
so
sir.
You're fair. No.
And I also.
Okay, Enzo. You don't got kids. You don't know nothing about groceries and shit either.
I don't go to the grocery store.
You're talking about feeding five, though.
Still, though.
You're feeding three people, like, and you're feeding kids at that. Like, kids don't eat the same as, like, an adult. With an adult, you can starve an adult. A child, you should not be starving your children. Like,
I think that we need to, like, kind of reframe that on a regular basis because we constantly think about eating and everything as it pertains to money. Mm-hmm. And we constantly think of it as a monetary value, but we don't think about, like, the actual physical, emotional, and mental value that actually you gain after eating better food. Like, facts. The mind fog and everything. Like, you started talking about how you started thinking better, you started performing better.
Yeah, definitely.
That in and of itself is worth way more than...
I would say this. When I started drinking just pure water, my taste buds came in the sense that I didn't understand. Like, I remember one time this happened to me with one of my exes. I love eating chocolate. So I remember one time I was I bought like a Kit Kat and I was eating the Kit Kat and I was eating all the bars, you know, and she's looking at me like, doesn't that taste like super sweet to you? Like she's like, it's so bad. And I'm like, nah, it doesn't. It's good.
Kick
you know?
Your damn, man. You got me a sweet tooth.
And then I remember because like I have a sweet tooth specifically for chocolate, you know, so I remember... Once I started drinking water and all that, you know, I remember I got a Kit Kat. I was like, all right, you know, I'm going to eat this. And that's the first thing that happened to me. I tasted how sugary it actually is. It's just my taste buds were so numb to it because I was used to drinking soda and having so much sugar that I didn't feel how much sugar I was intaking.
Right.
And the moment I ate that Kit Kat, it was like, whoa, I remember that moment with that ex and I was like, damn, she was right. Like, this is very sugary.
You know what I noticed too?
You know?
I just came back from El Salvador a month ago and over there it's humid, so you're sweating 24/7. And facts. I felt like I had the need for more water. Mm-hmm. So I was drinking a lot of water out there. And then there'd be times where we would eat something and whatnot and I'd get a soda. And I almost had the same effect that he had, where it's like I felt how sweet the soda was, and I'm like, yo, this is not good for me. You know what I mean?
Right.
And ever since I've been back, I haven't drank as much soda as I have. Like, I'll drink maybe a can or so a week, but I've cut back a lot. I used to have like a can or two a day.
Yeah. You know? I think it's crazy too, is as soon as you start realizing that and how much processed our foods are, and you start weaning yourself off processed foods, yeah, you realize you actually have legitimate withdrawals, you know, because anytime you eat, like, for example, think about like the Lay's potato chips and then think about Takis, right? Think about all the flavor you get out of Takis. That good luck trying to eat like a basic ass piece of bread or something after eating a Taki. It's impossible. And these food industries, these fast food and all these like chips and everything, they know this. And that's why, like, what is it? Like in 2010, the fast food industry was a $200 billion a year industry, and now it's $300 billion just 10 years later a year. And if you think about it, like, think about all the stupid food porn posts that people have. It's always something lavish. You'll never see chicken and rice and vegetables and shit like that, because that's not cool. Right. People want to eat that lavish-ass shit, and then all of a sudden they get themselves addicted to it, and they realize all of a sudden when it comes down to actually cutting those things out because they're not good for you, they have legitimate withdrawals. And that's why what you're saying earlier was correct, which is, like, you kind of have to slowly cut yourself down, not cut yourself off, because you'll have, you know, your
body will go into a shock,
into a real relapse. And so therefore, like, you got to be cognizant of it, you know?
No, and that's the thing is, and even when I've tried to like have certain things like that I used to like, I eat them and then my body feels like, why did I do that?
Yeah.
Like, I just, my body just feels upset and I know that. And I'm like, I can't be eating this as much. Like, what was it? I think it was last week. Last week they brought one of my coworkers. He brought in food for the office, and he brings in these were deep fried. I've been eating just chicken and rice, you know, sandwich in the morning, chicken and rice for lunch, chicken and rice for dinner. That's, you know, what I've been doing. But he brought in deep fried birria tacos.
Oh my God.
And I was like, he was like, help yourself. I brought enough for everybody. And I was like, nothing's going to happen. You know, I've had these before.
He's like, you got them and they're free?
You know, so I serve myself too. As soon as I take that first bite of that first one, my body goes, what are you doing?
What are you doing,
buddy? This is a lot of deep fried. This is a lot of oil here, buddy. My body, I was like, I'm not about to eat that second one. I was like, I can't. Like,
see, it's when just, it's like that, it's a little like, that's crazy.
It's because like my eating habits has changed. And it's
what I'm saying. Like when you do stuff like that, for sure.
Like I'm telling you, like, but it's like you don't realize it until you start doing those changes. Mm-hmm. You start realizing, like, oh, this wasn't good for me. Yeah,
That's wild, bro. So how do your kids see you when you're doing these like transformations and you go from like 20 something to like back down to like 130 something, and they're like seeing you compete? What do they tell you about, dad, like, you're doing it again, or dad, you're buff again, or
No, it's funny. So my kids, so I've always been on, like I said, random health kicks here and there, but I haven't always been at the best at cooking for it, per se. Mm-hmm. And so it's funny because my kids have, I would say trauma, but they definitely have flashbacks of when I wouldn't cook the rice all the way through, or cook everything like that. So every time I eat like that around them, they're like, dad, really, that rice? Oh my God, I remember. I'm like, I get it. I didn't cook the rice that time.
I was young too. You was like, I was young too.
But you know, my younger daughter says something to me that really, really impacted me. Because they don't really care about bodybuilding, but they see me pursuing something that I love and building upon it. And I know that for them, it shows them they can also
dedication.
And so what they, you know, what I see that they appreciate is the fact that I invest myself into myself and constantly pursue it. And it's like my younger daughter, oh man, the other day she's like, yeah, I want to be a father, you know, I want to be a parent just like you, not a father just like you, but a parent just like you,
right.
You know, because you go after what you want. And then you also try to teach us how to just be present with it. And I was like, oh shit, you know? And so
how old is she?
She's 15.
Damn.
Just turned 15.
You got some smart kids.
Oh,
right,
no, I'm very proud of my daughters, man. They are
like that already. Damn.
Oh, of course. Yeah, they, I mean, they, they experienced a lot. You know, me and their mother divorced when my older one was 4 and the younger one was 2, like when the cerebral cortex is developing and everything. And it wasn't always the easiest thing to get through. But we, all three of us, went through this emotional intelligence course a few years ago. And it kind of helped us process our emotions, show us why those emotions are being triggered, and then also being withdrawn from not having to respond in lieu of that emotion. Understanding, yeah, objectively, I'm feeling hurt. Objectively, I'm feeling insecure. Objectively, I'm feeling like this. But that doesn't mean I have to act out in that manner.
Where'd you get that test at? Of course.
It's called Choice. It's actually, I don't want to say it's like a retreat, but it's definitely a full-on course that you experience with other people, and it's like 3 months long in Vegas.
So you got to go for 3 months?
Well, you go there for a weekend, you come back, you go there for the next weekend, and then...
For 3 months?
Yeah, well, not for 3 months, but so you do those first 2 weekends, and then you go back, and then you kind of just do everything through telephone, but you have all these tasks and all these other things you got to do.
With your kids?
Well, no. Well, like, you go individually. But I'm saying is I went through it, and then I put my daughters through it afterwards, after what I learned about myself.
Damn.
And so that's also part of this whole transformation is finally, like I said, like... When I saw my adoption paperwork and I started figuring out those are my triggers, had I not taken the course that I had went through,
you never would have I would have
just burned those papers and said, fuck this, I'm the victim, I'm blah, 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 blah. But then what that course was a catalyst for me to learn about myself is that, yeah, these circumstances are very challenging. You know, going from being adopted to... facing Asian discrimination to getting cheated on, going through the divorce, going broke, God knows how many different times, and getting to here, it's like, all right, that's your story. That's what the fuck you have. Either you can make something of yourself,
own it,
be something, or you can victimize yourself and be like everybody else and have excuses. And I'm like, man, fuck that. I'm going to own my goddamn life. You know, but if it wasn't for that course, I would have just, all those stories I would have told myself, I'm like, oh, that's a good reason not to do anything. Mm-hmm. You know? And then if it wasn't for that course to show me.
Stay stagnant and stay in that position that. Yeah,
exactly.
It's everybody else's fault but my own.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's why I'm so goddamn grateful for having this feeling of not being enough, because it is insatiable. I cannot stop it.
It's propelling. It's definitely.
Always, right?
I can feel that. I can relate to that, you know, like, maybe not in a fitness thing, but I feel like in just being an overachiever in certain things, in certain aspects of my life, that I was like, I always felt like, damn, I didn't get the respect, or I didn't get the love, right? You know, so I'm going to overachieve in this area or that area. And sometimes it did good, and then sometimes, you know, being overachiever is not the great thing either, because you put an X on your back. But that's crazy that you put your kids through that. How old were they when they went through Choice?
They were teenagers, though, maybe 13, 14. Like, not too long ago, but,
How has that developed them?
Oh, my God. So my older daughter originally was, so she's dyslexic. Mm-hmm. And in school, they treated her like she was dyslexic. She told herself she was dyslexic, and she just introverted herself into a hole, accepting bad grades, doing this. After
she didn't try to overachieve, because it's like playing the victim, but with that.
Yes. And that's why it's really important to be cognizant of what you tell your kids and the stories they tell themselves and the labels, you know, because when, you know, for me, for example, like I talked about when I was younger, all the Asian rhetoric. So I believed it at one point,
like,
or another.
Limiting beliefs, like you said on your podcast.
Limiting beliefs, the stories that you tell yourself. Because I remember when I would do something that might not be socially acceptable, I would say things like, oh, that's because I'm Asian, right? And I saw my older daughter doing that with regards to the bad grades and everything. Oh, it's because I'm dyslexic. You know, whatever stories and whatever version of yourself that you accept. Ever since she went through that, she started breaking out of her introverted hole. She started actually being assertive. And dude, she's a powerhouse of a 16-year-old daughter. Like, she checks me on some shit, and she definitely calms me down, and she definitely, like, handles things. No, mind you, she's still a 16-year-old. She has some things.
She's way more self-aware herself, though.
Oh, my God. That's beautiful. I am almost, I don't want to say jealous, but my God, I could only
to imagine. To have that at 16, right?
Bro.
That's crazy.
Like, bro, like, I remember, but there's a thing about my older daughter. She's been like this before she even went through that. Because I remember I was living in Vegas, and I was dating a girl in San Diego, and I would make that commute. Remember one time me and her got into this big argument, I tantrum, started driving my ass to Vegas, and my older daughter goes, you know, Dad, you ever think about maybe calming down first and then talking to her? I was like, whoa. And she was 10 at the time. And I remember I sat there, I'm like,
you know what's crazy? I feel like God sends our kids to do that sometimes.
Bro, they are.
It's happened to me already where I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
You're 3 and you're saying this.
It's interesting.
Like, what?
It's very interesting. Yeah. And so I'm happy that though she went through that course because now she's on her own path. And now the younger one is a little bit more different. She's got the the assertive, gotta prove yourself kind of notion that she got from me. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit more interesting to try to channel that personality. But yeah,
because it's like
still,
you, huh? It's like,
oh my
it's like
God.
You're looking at a spitting image, you're like, ah, yikes.
Yeah, my kids are versions of me. You know, my older
different
ones,
versions, right?
The more intuitive, sensitive, present kind of person, and the younger one is the competitive. I gotta prove myself through this, and this. And it's
did you co-parent with her with the mom?
I mean, I went to war with their mom for years.
So did she disagree with the choice and you sending them to that course?
No, because I think they saw what it did for me. My ex-wife were at war for years.
Prior to that.
And, you know, just kind of like anybody else. Like, you did this. And, well, you did that. You did this. You did that. And I realized it was just me still being hurt from how our marriage didn't work out. You know, and for the things and for the
unresolved issues.
And the insecurities that I still carried from that. It was like I blamed it on her instead of accepting responsibility on my own. Mm. And then it's when I started accepting that. And mind you, she still was at war with me. I stopped. Wow. And honestly, it was probably about...
Yeah, because it takes two, right?
It does take two. And I think it finally...
One needs to concede in order for progress to happen.
Yeah. And it's interesting, too, because you see the stories that they tell themselves. And it's crazy because ever since I had that awareness, had that epiphany, and had that withdrawal, I see that she's still doing the same thing and she stopped. But then I see all these other people that are in their... fights and their marriages they're fighting or their divorces and they're fighting. And I see that's exactly what it is. It's just you have a whole bunch of unresolved issues and you're instead of taking ownership of it, right? You are projecting it onto the other person and making them responsible for how you feel instead of just being like, no, I actually allowed them to make me feel like this.
Yeah.
And it's like as soon as you take ownership of everything in your life, that's when shit changes.
Facts.
That is when shit changes.
You know? I feel like that's what I had to realize with, and I'm still realizing it because I found out my why I had trauma to even start touching a pill. And then now it's like figuring out why I even touched marijuana and weed, right? So it's like, that shit does a lot to you once you have that awareness of like, damn, this is what caused that. This is what broke the camel's back that just made me say, fuck it, you know what I mean? And then now it's like, to go back even, to peel the onion even further and see like, damn, why do I get angry sometimes? And just yell and like, you know? And then like, I feel like this week, since I stopped smoking, right? And like, my voice went away on the third day or something like that. It was like gone. I took a nap at the shop, came back from that nap, voice was shot. Mm. And I'm like, bro, I've been chilling at the shop. I didn't even yell at nobody. I ain't like, because sometimes, you know, Caesar's on that side and it's like, Caesar, I'm saying like, we're just that loud. I'm loud. I'm Salvadorian too. So we're just loud people. But it's like.
He's a spitting image of my mother.
And it's that. So it's like, bro, my voice is gone. So I'm like, bro, what happened?
Hold on. You guys just compare Caesar to your mom.
No, I'm saying that because Caesar's so far. Because you know how Caesar's chair is over there.
He's talking about how like he's loud and all that. And I'm like he's a spitting image.
I thought you were saying compare Caesar to your mom. Why I was dying laughing. Nah. So we're like, dad, we're talking about dad bods. You're saying Caesar's got a mom bod. Like,
now he's gonna be mad. Caesar's gonna be like, why are y'all talking to me on the podcast?
That'd be hilarious.
Nah, this is Caesar's.
Caesar, you heard him wrong.
This is cue to come clear his name on the podcast.
I already told him he's gonna be on the pod at the shop once we get.
Everybody
the shop.
Has to be on the pod. Every barber is gonna be Mando.
They're gonna be talking shit about Enzo and be like, all he plays is documentaries.
Yeah,
and-
but you know, I think you bring up something that I've really worked through a lot of. So I think when people like are on their diets and they're being cognizant of their health. They just get to a totalitarian as a this or nothing, right? And so for me, I do it. I still smoke a lot of weed. I still drink here and there. I still do these other things. But it's interesting because before I would, you know, let's say I'm getting ready for prep and I have a shot of whiskey. I'm like, oh my God, I'm doing fucking just drinking. And then I'd make myself feel bad. I'd make myself feel bad about this, this, and this. But then at the end of the day, man, it's like I enjoy whiskey. I enjoy smoking. I enjoy these kind of things. And like, who's,
so I told myself
who, but who is someone to tell me what I'm doing is wrong? Who is someone to tell me that that's a bad action? It's not. I mean, yeah, sure, it might have an inclination of health, but based on how I've lived my life up until this point, having a drink here and there is very minuscule. And I would say for how I've been able to handle things and based off of how I've programmed myself over the years, that having a drink every once in a while, smoking every once in a while, is not bad at all. And it's actually better because otherwise I'm going to be like dwelling in my mind about doing it. And that would take away more than just fucking doing it.
That would take you into a bigger rabbit hole.
And that's exactly the thing that I told myself yesterday. So, you know, I'll smoke in a couple days again, you know. Because, like, my thing, what I was doing, I was just smoking every waking moment, bro. Mm-hmm. It was like, why? And then I wasn't because I was just, I feel like my productivity was dropping. And, you know, when anything that you do too much is bad, you know. So that's where I feel like I was at. But now where I'm like, I took a couple days off and I was able to, like, see myself and be like, yo, I could do this. You know, I don't really got to be a slave to weed either, you know. Because right. I feel like sometimes we're a slave to bad habits and shit. And we also think, like, we're conditioned to this and we're not going to change. And, like, nah, you can't change. You just have to make that decision yeah. and that choice. You know what I'm saying? Like, no pun intended. But really making that choice to be like, yo, I'm going to just stop. And doing it and just cutting the bullshit, cutting the fat out. And like, but until you make that decision, till you find out that motive of why,
yeah,
you're gonna be chasing your tail, you know what I mean? But that's crazy, bro. It's incredible, bro, to see the, your journey as a 205-pound man to now you're 137.
Yeah.
About to compete in 7 weeks, bro. Like, I applaud you, bro. You're an inspiration to many, bro. I appreciate you coming here. Man, you got any last words for?
Nah, we're good.
For Alan.
Thank you for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you, bro.
I appreciate it.
Anything else you want to say to everybody?
Man, actually, yeah. Actually, you guys can check out my podcast, the Shifty Q Podcast. It's on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. And I'm actually, like I said earlier, I'm actually documenting this journey, and it's a lot more.
When is that going to be completed, by the way?
So
before
I had
we wrap it up.
So I have the first episode out right now. It's more of like a 2-minute snippet of what's to come. The second episode will probably come out here in a week. And this is more going into the why. So everything kind of talked about with the paperwork and then the internal battle, it's mm-hmm. more going into that. And then
the third part would be when you complete your competition.
The fourth part is going to be when I complete. The third part is going to go into the more actual, like, breaking down these habits. I did this, and because of this, you know, like.
Got you.
Because I didn't want to, like, just talk about, hey, I worked out and I eat this. Like, it's fucking boring as shit, right? Tell me the real shit. Like, oh, hey, you're a degenerate. Now you're a fucking working out, you know. Tell me about all the drugs that you did that now all the pre-workout you do instead, you know. Like, that's a better story. Right, that's a better thing to talk about. Yeah, and it's real, right? And I'm not, like, one of those guys that, like, that had the phenomenal genetics. So I'm not whatever. I'm the guy that fucking was fat, that was a degenerate, that didn't think highly of myself. And then at one point or another, I'm said, fuck that. I'm going to invest into what that means and make something of
and
myself.
Put in the work.
You're goddamn
and
right.
Put in the fucking
and
work.
That's why you said it's a choice. And so, yeah. So, yeah, I guess to re-harp on that 5-year question and not to make this any longer, but is to continuously spread that message. Invest into yourself. Fuck whatever story you told about yourself and start just writing your own chapters.
Let's fucking get it.
Reach. Amen. I love that.
I love that, bro. Thank you, Alan.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Alan.
Thank you all.
Hold up, though.
What's up?
What sports do you watch?
What sports? NFL, yeah. For sure.
Okay.
I'm the hugest Jacksonville Jaguar fan. If you want to talk about sports, I will sit here and talk football all day long.
Okay.
If y'all really want to.
Let's explore that a little bit just because we have a little bit of sports that we need to talk about.
All right.
We went to the late game yesterday too.
I'm down to Lakers. Well, I'm not the biggest NBA fan anymore, but...
anymore. That? Means that you know at least the sport, though.
Well, yeah. No, I was a big, like, what, 90s, 2000s NBA. You know, back when, like, there was a center, there was a point guard, there was a shooting
it's
guard.
It's funny because Enzo was just talking about that yesterday. We were at the game at the late game.
Shoot three.
Yeah, and there's you know how in the middle of the games they do these competitions of, you know, you shoot from here, you get a point. It's to win some prize, right? And it was like, I think a middle school kid or in high school, and he went for the three for every opportunity. He could have done a layup. He could have done a free
All he
throw.
Had to do was score 10 points for 25,000.
And he just kept shooting threes?
All he did. And every time
he got
a rebound.
Three, though, which got him the prize, though.
A bag, bro. A Laker bag. You could have got 25,000 and you made 10. Like, how many layups to make 10 points?
So he made it more difficult on himself.
Bro, I was so mad. That's why I said that, bro. Because I was like, bro, you grab the rebound, just lay it back up and then go shoot the three. And then grab the next rebound. And you'll get two shots for one. Like, he killed his time. Like, it was.
Thank you, Steph Curry.
I wonder why, though. I wonder what was going through his head on why he's like.
The easier shot, right? It's the biggest.
Well, percentages, right? The percentages that said keep shooting the three.
If he shot the three, he would make the automatic 10 points.
Oh.
Faster.
Oh,
so,
no.
Yeah, if it was he shot the three, he would make the ten, he would make the 10 points.
If he shot on the first try, I think.
Yes, on the first try.
True, true.
So it was easier to, like, all right, let me try to make a three here, so then I get all the points, but it's harder technically.
Right.
Because you never been on that court. You never.
He bricked it, but he was on point. He just bricked it. I was like, damn. And the next one he made, but.
Yeah, but
he killed like 15 seconds by that time. Like, and then it was 25 seconds on the clock that they gave you, and it was it. But damn. Well, so,
yeah, you got to accommodate for that because you're going to miss, and that's a long rebound, and that's a long time off of that clock.
I'm just with you, bro. I'm used to somebody back to the basket, giving the ball, play big, point guard, play point guard, like right. Shooter shoot. But
and I think another thing that's really got me away from the NBA is that, like, it seems like players just want to get to a podium and talk about politics and talk about, like, humane issues that they can't even relate to. And I think that's, like, what I also that got me away from everything. Like, stop making your story into a drama. Like, yeah, you might have gone through some challenging times, but now you're making big shit money.
You see, but that's, like, that's my issue with, I like John Morant, but now look what he's doing. Because I can agree with what you're saying.
Right.
And then in the same coin, look at John Morant and be like, but last year y'all were talking about this. Or 2 years ago y'all were talking about Black Lives Matter, but now you're acting a fool and just throwing away your 39 million that he just
40 million
just because
he dropped the bag,
bruh.
Yeah, it's interesting though, because a lot of, especially today's day and age and in today's culture, of how much we put athletes and perennial athletes on a pedestal and they can do no wrong. Mm-hmm. This is purely speculative and purely just assumption based. I'm going to assume that John Morant was a prodigy since he was a kid.
For sure.
He was treated like a prodigy in its entirety. So therefore, his touch with reality and having to fear repercussion for his actions isn't as paramount as it for us. You know, for people that weren't perennial athletes, right, who had to pretty much.
I think his only flaw in high school is that I don't think he had the grades to go to like a D1 college. So he had to go to Murray State or something, or like a lower D1. But he was still a prodigy. He was playing next to Zion and all that, but he just now is making some foolish decisions. He just got a shoe deal.
His PR, bro. What was it?
That was not my gun. That's what he said.
I'm surprised they didn't turn that into like a gun control issue, you know what I mean, with the raid.
Yeah.
I'm surprised.
Like,
don't.
The media just be flipping everything on its head now, too, so it's kind of a trip to see that, but how about the Jaguars, bro?
Oh, man, don't get me started.
I always see you do that on your Instagram, bro.
Oh, yeah. No, last season.
Trevor Lawrence, huh?
Is amazing. You know, like, you get a fan base that is constantly expecting to lose. We expect to lose. And I would say that it shaped me as an NFL fan because I have to objectively look at the league.
How did you become a Jaguars fan, though?
So, my dad... when the Jags acquired Mark Brunell back in like 96, my dad worked with his uncle, and that's what got me into football. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, oh shit. And then they went to the AFC Championship in 96. So I'm like, oh, this is great, right? And then we went back in 99 and then in 02. And then it's like, I fell in love with those years.
Oh shit.
And then I think it was.
And then the team fell off?
Well, no. So they were still very, very, stout, right? Because we had the Marcus Stroud, John Henderson years, Rasheem Mathis, Fred Taylor. And those are the Jaguars I really fell in love with. I think like back in 03 or 04, they had a Hard Knocks episode detailing their preseason.
Oh, shit.
And for me, I was playing football at the time. And I remember they had a lot of interviews with Donovan Derry, still one of my favorite players at this time. I played strong safety as well. And I think because they gave him a light of being a human being and going through his everything, I just kind of related to that. And that's what really made me fall in love with that team.
So was it Madden?
Yeah. Well, no. Because
for me, for the Saints, it was Madden. I played the Saints, and I don't know why. I just played the Saints, and then Deuce McAllister, and I was like, Drew Brees ended up. I was like,
no.
Oh,
with
Saints,
Madden, though, I had to always create a player because they always made the Jags terrible. So I had this
made a big ass Jaguar player,
7 foot, 300-pound quarterback that runs a 4.3 40. Oh yeah,
I knew it.
Trevor Lawrence before Trevor Lawrence came to Jacksonville. God damn it.
That's crazy, bro.
But
how do you feel about the NFL now? And like, it's because you're talking about NBA being political, kind of, and the NFL is also. You feel like that's kind of lost the NFL's touch? Or
I think so, because the NFL, if you see how players are represented, they're representing an organization. Anytime they speak, they know that they're speaking in lieu of a brand, mm-hmm. you know, and they know that what they say affects other people in the locker room. And I feel like that's more resemblant of real life and more resemblant of how I want to live my life, knowing that my actions affect others.
Right.
And therefore, like, I think that's why I gravitate more towards NFL. And then on top of that, you know, I played baseball, football, and basketball in high school. And the camaraderie you develop from playing football with one another, that relationship that you make from, like, going to Hell Week and hitting them, like, left and right, you don't really get that from any other sport.
That's,
you know,
true. No, that's,
I mean,
definitely true.
I just moved back to my area that I grew up in, right? After 18 years, I saw about two or three people that I played football with, and it was just like old times. We connected just like that. And it's like that with people in the Navy, too. But if I have roommates, I have old roommates, I have old friends, blah, blah, that I do not have that connection with. And I've known those guys longer. Mm-hmm. But because of what I physically invested with these guys.
You were on the grit grind with them, right?
Absolutely. And I mean, and that's what makes us men, though, you know? And like, that's why, like, why I've learned this. I learned this recently. That's why, like, men, we talk shit to each other, because we want to know that if you go to battle with us and you have some type of stressful situation, that I can still trust you to maintain yourself and maintain your calm and still act in lieu of it. That's actually why we're programmed to be like, Enzo, you're a bitch. Like, damn. But then you see you laugh because you know I'm fucking around.
Right?
But I've definitely been around people and I've completely distanced myself from people like, really, Alan, you're going to call me a bitch? That's fucked up, you know? Like,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. Bro, that voice,
fuck that. I ain't fucking with you anymore. Like,
the voice, just the voice.
But it's
like you just had a balloon and you was like, really, Alan?
I can't help it. If like you show up as a bitch to me, that is the voice you have in my head for the rest of your life. Like, one of my old roommates, me and him just fucking butted heads. And I remember, like, he's like a buff ass dude, but some of the shit that he would say, like, I remember one time he didn't do dishes. I'm like, hey, man, what the fuck? He's like, you don't have to yell at me like that. And I'm like, oh, hell no. Hell no. You're a grown ass man.
That reminds me of somebody I know that I just had butted heads with too. And it was like, I told him something, and it was like, whoa, bro, like, relax yourself, buddy.
Like, right? Like, I'm so gonna post this and hashtag and tag you. You're gonna fucking get it, right? And that's not how they talk. But now, because they showed up as a bitch, like, that's how they talk, you know? And I can't respect you as a man anymore. Yeah.
Like, really, Ann? You're going to yell at me like that? Like,
yeah, bitch. Like, I guess I am. And that's not even me yelling. Ooh. That's just being like, yo, this is, I'm just holding correcting you accountable as a man.
Right. You got to wash the dishes, man. Who's going to carry the boat?
Right?
I had to do that in college as well.
Bro?
Yeah, bro. I would cook. And I'm the type of person that whatever I use, I clean. But I hate cleaning after other people.
Yes.
So, yes. Unless you're like my parents, that's a whole different story. But if you're my roommate, I don't like cleaning after you. Like, there was times where, bro, they would use my stuff because their stuff was dirty. And then I would get pissed off because then I'm like, I'm seeing my dishes in there and I'm like, why are my dishes in there? And why didn't you clean yours?
Yeah.
Why did you have to use mine when you could have just washed your own and used your own?
Yeah, dirty son of a gun.
So, yeah, no. I had to deal with that stuff. I had three other roommates. It was four. No. It's five of us, actually. So, four other roommates besides me.
Damn.
So, I had to deal with that in college.
Well, Manny, yesterday you went to your first Laker game, though, bro. Tell me about that.
Hold up. I wasn't asking before that. Is Trevor Lawrence your guy to take you to the
1,000%? We're fucking.
How many years till he does it?
At least three. Probably within these next 3 years. I wouldn't doubt it if we make a run next year, based off of the fact that we just got Calvin Ridley, based off of the fact that Trevor Lawrence is still on his rookie deal, and we have a fucking hell of a team.
Just keep Calvin Ridley away from the betting.
Well, dude, you know, that's so stupid based off of what they're doing.
Like, okay, break that down. What happened with that
guy? So he made a $1,500 parlay while he was suspended on DraftKings or something like that. And it was just for, like, the Falcons to win and all these other teams to win. It was just
a parlay. But not his team.
No, it was his team. It was on the Falcons. And he betted for them to win.
You can't do that?
No. You can, because it starts questioning the integrity of the game, like the whole Pete Rose effect.
So even like, if you had insider information that they were going to win.
But even if he was suspended, He can't bet?
No, he got, that's the reason why he got suspended. So what happened was that he checked out for his own mental health. And then while he was checked out, he is when he made his bet. And then the NFL decided to suspend him the very next year for that.
For the whole year.
For the whole year. So we got him effectively on his rookie deal, except on his fifth year option. And now, yeah,
So it's basically he took a year off.
Bro, just watch. I would not doubt it if the Jags, mark my words on this podcast, we're going to have at least the number one or the number two seed in the AFC, regardless of who the fuck we play. That includes the Chiefs. That includes the Bengals. And we are going to run ship. Now, mind you, man. I don't know if that's going to get us to a Super Bowl.
I don't know, man. Fuck both those teams. The Broncos are coming, my boy.
You heard him, my boy.
He's a Broncos fan. Yeah. You offended him.
You know what I love about Russell Wilson? He's just AFC. Like, boom, boom, let's hide. Because that's what he did all this season.
Well, yeah, bro. You didn't have a fucking O-line. You have to fucking run for your life.
I mean, when you have...
We just spent about $150 million on an O-line. So, and that's... Those are the most, besides like quarterbacks and shit, they're like the highest.
Riled up, you got them.
No, but you know.
They're the most paid players in the league. So you need to pay the person to take your own.
You know what I love about this next year? What I love about this next year, especially with the Broncos, is Sean Payton's contract. Did you see the clause that he's allowed to get out of in his first year?
What?
He's allowed to, in his clause, I believe. Now, mind you.
He didn't even know that he's a Bronco
again,
fan.
He's allowed to determine if Russell Wilson is the answer or quarterback.
If he determines
after that first year that Russell Wilson is not the answer, Sean Payton can leave his contract. He's done.
But honestly, what does that say about him as a coach? What does that say about him as a legacy? He just gave up after a year?
No, but Sean Payton's a solidified, like,
yeah,
he's
got
a
ring already, bro.
But I mean, so does Russell Wilson, but Russell Wilson's in question. But Russell Wilson's in question right now. And look, then that's the thing is, Russell Wilson has to perform. He has
course,
to, no matter what.
Time, right, because you, of what you, he you did you last year. You look at the card that you were dealt, bro. No one could do anything. Trevor Lawrence couldn't do shit without an O-line, bro. You got to...
I mean,
Yankee may make some plays,
he couldn't do anything without a head coach. That's what he couldn't do.
But even then, you don't have an O-line. You don't have nobody protecting your back. Why do you think, like, a lot of these, like, quarterbacks are able to do anything, you know what I mean? Because they have someone protecting. Yeah, you have... people like Patrick Mahomes that's able to move around the pocket and whatnot, but
sorry, buddy, but the Broncos. They not
besides either. That, if you don't have that type of quarterback, bro, you're getting hit like 24/7.
You don't think Russell just passed his prime?
Yeah,
I mean, look at Russell Wilson is a 5'10" quarterback, and if you look at how he was in the Seahawks, he's a rolling quarterback. He should. I mean, with his size and his athleticism, he should be used to getting out of the pocket when necessary. That should be an acquired trait of someone who's a short quarterback, you know. And so it's like,
no doubt. But you're also transitioning your career. You're not the Russell Wilson of a couple years ago. You know what I mean? So you know, when we saw in the last couple games too of the Broncos, they were as soon as they got rid of that head coach too. Like you're pointing out how a head coach makes a difference.
Right.
We just got Sean Payton. A very good head coach at that.
Hey, he's not a Saints fan, but he seems like he supports your ex-coach, right? Man.
Bro, I would watch the Saints a lot. You know I would.
No.
No, he lost to us.
Oh wait, you're a
no. He's a he. The,
he's
in,
a Saints
the,
fan.
Well,
I'm
no,
Saints
the Broncos.
That was,
the Broncos,
Bounty
Broncos
Gate. Coach,
the Colts lost to the
that
Saints.
That was
so
Bounty
that's
Gate,
why.
Bro. If you guys like took out half the league, that
the
year,
whole
bro.
League did that.
And then
though,
Sean Payton,
what did he have to do?
What did he have to do? He had to sit out a whole year, bro. That's all good.
Now I know,
but you're still raving for him, aren't you?
Well, he's my quarterback. He's my
he's a coach. You kind of have no choice, right?
What am I going to say? Fuck him. I don't want him anymore.
Bro,
I want him to Bounty Gate for your team now.
Yeah, I was supporting Urban Meyer during that year with the Jags, that's for sure. So, I mean, it just, you roll with your team. You know what I mean? 100% loyal.
Facts.
So, no, but I mean, that's, the Broncos are in a very interesting spot because, yeah, this is a make or break year. And so, actually, I got to ask you, let's say Russell Wilson has another year like this again. What do you as a Broncos fan want to happen at the quarterback position?
It's a very tough question.
Whoa.
But you have someone like Lamar Jackson out there is basically going to start looking for a new team. There's options out there. And the Broncos are that type of team that they're going to go out there and most likely...
John Elway?
No, buy, like get a free agent quarterback, then like, you know, build one up through the draft and all that type of stuff because it just hasn't worked out for us in that aspect.
But it also hasn't worked out for you guys in the draft.
That's what I'm saying. It hasn't.
Paxton Lynch, that's the one. Tim Tebow, you know what I mean? Like,
and Tim Tebow had his years. That's when I really became a Bronco fan because his year was when Peyton Manning was
the year after.
The year before that was when he was injured. They cut him from the Colts, and then Tim Tebow was just having a great season that season. And then the next season, they get Peyton Manning, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, for the Broncos, that's what's going to be the answer, is getting a quarterback that's a free agent. I mean, the Saints just got Derek Carr. Raiders just got Jimmy Garoppolo, you know what I mean?
But do you really think those moves are going to work out for them?
Nope.
I think
I'm a Saints fan.
I think Derek Carr is going to be better with the Saints because
Sean Payton, but we don't even have him anymore.
What I see with...
if we had Sean Payton, then maybe,
with,
but
Derek Carr is that Derek Carr, he went through so many changes in that Raider team. Mm-hmm. When they had Jack Del Rio, it was probably the best Raider team I've seen in a long time. Then he gets injured. Then they fire Jack Del Rio. You got John Gruden and all that bullshit. You get... Marshawn Lynch back in, they trade Khalil Mack, all this stuff that just like, you know, I feel like it's not consistent for a quarterback. You're talking about, again, coaching. I feel like Jack Del Rio was the coach that would have taken the Raiders probably to the promised land, you know what I mean?
You know what I'm starting to notice in the NFL, though? The coaching carousel is so damn repetitive that people and all players should expect it. You know, I know that we use that as a story and a rhetoric with all quarterbacks, like Alex Smith. He's always had a revolving quarterback, whatever. Nah, Patrick Mahomes is just the shit. Like, you don't need to.
Facts.
It doesn't matter what coach you have there. He's that dude. He's that guy, mm-hmm. right? And Trevor Lawrence is that guy. And what you're starting to realize
where did he go? With Clemson? He was at Clemson. When he was at Clemson, the shit he did at Clemson was like, and the long, just blonde hair. Just,
oh, yeah.
That shit looked crazy. I was like, this is Moses.
But what I'm saying is, it's
you. Got Burrow too.
You see the
same way.
You see the league needing those. That's him quarterbacks, and that's what it's all being revolved around. Or a quarterback that has one of those years. It's there's no in between.
It's a trip how the NFL still keeps that old school essence that it's still a quarterback's league. It's not like the NBA where it's like the NBA went to like every. It's a five positionless league now where everybody could play everything.
Yeah, everybody can play every position.
Yeah,
no matter him. No more specialists.
So the Jaguars to the Super Bowl next year.
I would say they have a 1 or 2 seed and a very, very good chance. And if not next year, it's the year after. For sure. You could put that on whatever. Unless Trevor Lawrence gets hurt. Then that's another story.
Let's hope he doesn't break a leg.
Bro, there was a game last year against Detroit where Trevor Lawrence, he had a mad, wicked, twisted ankle. You could feel all of us as Jags fans just dying.
It died, Marisa?
But, yeah.
So, to switch lanes a little bit, man, you went to your first Laker game yesterday.
Yeah.
How was it, bro? Was it everything you ever thought about it?
It was different. I mean, I had been to every other sport. It's just never basketball for some reason.
That's interesting.
I've been to soccer games growing up. I've been at NFL games. I've been to baseball games. I've been to hockey games. I just never gone to a basketball game.
You've been to a basketball game, Laker game before?
Oh, yeah. I went to a bunch of them. Like, I remember going when, like, Cedric Ceballos was a Laker.
Wow.
Yeah.
Damn, you saw a young Kobe then.
Yeah, I was a big fan of young Kobe. So.
Damn. You see, that's what I feel bad for you, bro.
Yeah, I never got to see him live.
No. Not only that.
TV is where I saw him.
The greatest player you saw yesterday was AD.
Practically.
And he didn't go off.
Oh, no. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he didn't go off.
The greatest player he saw was Austin Reeves.
Yeah, he went
off. Austin Reeves. Oh, he had a career night last
night. Yeah,
right?
Exactly. 35. Exactly, yo.
Yeah.
So that's the greatest white boy you ever seen ball right there.
Austin Reeves.
I said it last night. I said he's the second reincarnation of Jerry West. And he proved it to me last night, bro. He did that.
That's a large statement, man.
I think he's that good. Honestly, bro, have you seen his pivot?
Jerry West,
the way he cuts is really good.
I just feel that I say that because Jerry West was playing in an era back then where like people weren't as athletic and they weren't doing everything that he's doing.
Oh, that's
now.
The typical. You can't make that argument.
They were playing in the 50s and the 60s. They weren't working out like how they are.
Yeah,
now.
Sure. Yeah, you can't. But you can't argue like current people who
have a 3-point line.
You can't argue with people that have benefited from evolution and then compare.
Nah, for sure.
I'm not trying to
shit on Jerry West. I'm saying like he's the equivalent of like the 2023 version of Jerry West.
Led the Lakers, I think, 10 NBA finals.
I mean, obviously, I don't think Austin Reeves is gonna do that for us.
Look at the NBA.
But why did he lead us to that so many?
No. But think about this, right?
The league was sorry.
All right. So why is Jerry West remembered? That's the better
the logo,
question.
Mr. Logo.
Well, no, because of what he accomplished and what he got the Lakers to do.
Right.
Not because he can shoot, not because of whatever, because of what he brought as a culture and what he raised the dynasty.
I'm just talking shit
because
I'm a young ass.
I know that, but what I'm saying is that's why I find it really, really troubling when you have these players.
Your voice is changing in his head right now, bro.
It just...
He raised the pitch, bro.
Austin Reeves is Jerry West.
It's what I heard. It's actually what I heard. There you go, Enzo. Your voice is like that for the rest of this timeout now.
Do it again. Do it again.
I can't do it now. I can't do it provoked like that.
Oh, that was too good, yo. Anisha, you're a good one.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious. But no.
I had to be my brother.
It's hard. But no, it is. Let them be them, you know?
Just to see him do that last night was incredible, though, bro. Like, this dude had... I was seeing, like, White Mamba out there, bro, because he was like, pump fake, up and under. And I was like, what the fuck, bro?
They caught him because he's from, like, the
hillbilly,
hillbilly Mamba.
Yeah. Hillbilly Kobe?
Yeah, he said that when he came in. Oh, wow. To the Lakers. He said that was his nickname.
I mean, he has a nice pivot, bro. And he was making some shit yesterday that, like, he jumps this high.
We literally won that game because of him. He went to the line. And what did he get, like, 7 points at the line?
Nah, he had, like...
No, I'm talking about the end, the last 3 minutes. It was like seven points.
Yeah, you're right.
Literally got us the win.
All the free throws were,
free throws that he got at the end.
They were double teaming him in the third and the fourth, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, what, 35 or 37? Something like that. He had something
35
like that.
35 is what he had last
time. That shit was incredible.
It's like really troubling, though, to watch those Laker teams because I grew up with like the Kobe Shaqs, the Nick Van Exel, Eddie Jones, the young Kobes, and like and Del Harris, Vlade Divac, you know? Mm-hmm. And now you got just people. There sometimes, I guess. I mean, LeBron.
And the whole team gets shifted.
Right. And
I mean, we've had like, what, 4 or 5 shifts?
What do you
mean? Since Bron?
Oh, shit. Is that what you mean? Yeah.
Like 4 or 5 shifts.
Talk
right?
about like roster overhauls?
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
You don't like complete overhauls.
You
where like the two main guys that have been there has just been LeBron and AD.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah.
And then even them, it's
even
like,
the coaches don't last.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, even LeBron and AD don't last. I mean, look at them. They never play they very rarely play or very 100% healthy.
Yeah, for the whole season. And I mean, AD doesn't, but LeBron at least gives you at least like 60 games out of the year.
But when you watch them though, do you really feel like they have their heart into it? Like, do you really feel like they're playing their ass off? Because I don't.
No.
And I think that's why, honestly, I think that's the biggest thing with me in today's NBA is I don't see the heart. I don't see the people caring anymore. I don't see people taking charges and fouls. Like, I remember watching, like, the 90s, like, NBA finals.
It just seems like you're watching offense, basically, Race.
I'm just watching people care about their stats. Like, I remember Scottie Pippen permanently fucking up his back because of all the charges he took in the NBA finals.
Sure.
And fucking Scottie Pippen earned my respect with that kind of shit, you know? I've seen Kobe fail and airball three-pointers in the playoffs, and the next year fucking take it to heart and dominate, mm-hmm. you know? And it's like... You don't see that in today's NBA. You see them with their shoe deals. You see them pulling out guns. You see them talking about politics. You see them acting like bitches. You know what I mean? And it's just like, fuck, dude. It's like, what I enjoy about sports, what I enjoy about competition and what it brings out.
Yeah.
And you don't see that.
Because I feel like what kind of took that away from the NBA is this Nike movie we're about to see. Where it has to do with Sonny Vaccaro and how basically they got Jordan. Because when they break that down and you watch the ESPN 30 for 30 about it,
mm-hmm.
they saw how that started AAU basketball.
Mm.
And it's not that it stopped competition, but they even say it there. Like, everybody became, like, friends with each other.
Yeah. They all know each other. They all know each other. They're all, little like, kids.
And, like, the thing about, for example, Jordan, it was, like, people feared Jordan.
Yeah.
Not even just as a player. But
they
like,
feared Kobe, too.
But yeah, because Kobe also kind of he took that mantra on with him type of thing. But it's
and then
like,
the difference with LeBron recruited people.
Was AAU was because they played together. You know what I mean? Maybe not him exact. I don't know if he was playing AAU basketball.
Yeah, he was.
So, but you know what I'm saying? So then all the people he was playing with, and you got Kevin Durant, though, you got all the stories of these players playing together since they were middle school, you know, all these AAU teams and all stuff like that. So I think that is a big reason probably why the NBA has changed so much. Why you don't see this, like, because they're making so much more money.
Yeah.
You know, you're there and all that type of stuff. So it's a lot different, definitely.
Just now start focusing more on soccer.
Nah, that's another corrupt sport we don't want to talk about.
Right. You know what I find crazy about soccer, though, is like how every other country in this world, soccer is a very easy, like anybody can play soccer.
Right.
But in America, the only way you play soccer is if you're in like a privileged neighborhood playing for a club, something, spending excess in money.
Facts.
And it's crazy because then we wonder why
we suck,
but you're literally eliminating the potential really good athletes that can play just by the fact that they can't afford it. Right. And I wish America would start changing that culture of soccer, because you can tell there are a lot of eager Americans that want to be good at soccer, that actually want to.
I mean, this team that played in the World Cup did decent.
Did they? I didn't pay attention too much.
They did decent. I mean, it looks, I mean, they're all in their mid, like, you know, early 20s, majority of them. So it looks like for the next World Cup, they might have a more serious team.
Let's hope. So, let's hope.
Yeah.
Hopefully El Salvador makes it, man. That's where we're from.
You know, it's crazy, though. What did you say you were from, Alan? Like, your heritage, your background?
Oh, my ethnicity? I'm Korean and Japanese.
So, it's just in. Japan just beat Mexico in the World Baseball Classic.
What?
Final People were thinking Mexico was going to beat
Japan or United States?
The final is going to be Japan, United States, and Shohei Ohtani.
What is 6ix9ine saying now? What is 6ix9ine saying now? Who's talking all this shit?
He was saying,
I'm Mexican, man. My mom
more
raised
Mexican
me.
Than Puerto Rican.
Yeah, bro. He was shitting on his other side. I'm like, bro, your daddy made you, bro. He held you in his nutsack for his whole life until he birthed you. I mean, I'm just so biased because I'm a man, but.
Yeah.
That's crazy, bro.
But Japan has a huge baseball culture. I mean, that's where, like, what Ichiro Suzuki came from.
Bro, I used to love Ichiro, bro.
Hideki Matsui. Like, there's some legitimate.
So, hold up. You said you played baseball in high school.
I did.
What position?
I played second base, shortstop, center field. I was a defensive guy.
Is that the best sport where you perform the best, or is it basketball or football? Which one's your favorite sport?
Favorite sport has to be football, but ironically, that's the one I was worst at than anything else.
Okay. Why is that?
Because I think with football, you have to be physically naturally gifted at some point to excel. Like, you could only do so much with you know.
Unless you're fast. Similar to basketball, you need the height.
Right, but with basketball, you can practice shooting. You can practice dribbling. You could practice being a point guard. So I was actually halfway decent as a point guard because I could practice in my front yard. I could practice in a pickup game.
Right.
You can only do so many hits. You can only reach so many routes on the field. You can only do so much. And I was a strong safety in football. And on top of that, football really isn't a thing for me. Wasn't a thing for me until high school, you know? And so, like, I spent years playing baseball and basketball since I was like 5. And
then those are the sports you knew by memory.
Right. And I think that I just kind of lost the passion for it, because I think that camaraderie, as soon as I experienced that camaraderie with football, and just the notion of contributing to something that's bigger than yourself, I just got addicted to that. And therefore, it's like, and like, it's like to this day, like I was just telling you, I still have people that I played football with in high school that still tell me to this day, like, dude, the way you showed up for us, the way that you were a leader off the field, like, that means so much more to me. And it carried me, right? And it's like, holy fuck.
You were always a leader even back then when you were younger.
That's what football is actually what taught me about leadership. It's because I trained so, like, again, I'm not gifted at football, but I trained my ass off to make up for the lack thereof. I think, and that's what got me, like I said, to weightlifting. Mm-hmm. And what I found out is that by showing up and practicing my ass off, other people saw it. And that's what had them, you know, that's what earned me my respect, is seeing that. And I think that's what got me in love with the sport. It's what got me in love with that in general. And then, it showed me that example, being an example is a form of leadership. And it's what got me into that space.
Oh, shit.
It's what showed me.
Football first, then it would be baseball, and then it's basketball.
Yeah, absolutely. Basketball is a very far third. Like,
so you don't even play pickup ball now?
Not anymore, no. Well, now it's like, now that I'm in my 30s, I'm so scared I'm going to hurt myself. You know, like, fuck, I got to. If I get through a leg day sometimes, I sit there hobbling like I just had a really bad time, and I'm not going to elaborate any more on that. But, you know, so therefore, like, basketball, bro, I twist one ankle, I can't lift weights, I'm going to be in this whole depressive state, you know? Just, all it takes is just that one snap, that one whatever.
That's all.
But on the same token, you asked me if I want to play flag football, I'm there. I'm going to be there for flag football or some shit.
What about golf?
It's too boring. Golf is the one sport where no matter how many times I swing a golf club, I get worse at hitting the ball.
Whoa.
Which is interesting, because I, you know, my I started playing baseball when I was 5. When I was 4,
you're used to the batting.
I'm used to like having like this little stance. So if I think if they were to like slow pitch a golf ball and I had to swing it with the golf, then I'd be knocking that shit. Okay, not knocking that shit out of the park, knocking that shit at least past the first hole. But you know, but like that, and I find myself constantly wanting to take a step, wanting to like hold the golf club and like curl around like a bat.
Right. But no, I feel like the last time we went golfing, that's how I was holding the ball.
The ball?
I mean, the club. I was holding the club like a baseball bat. and they actually work, but you're swinging down, so it's hard.
It's
not like you're swinging in the middle where the ball is and shit, but damn, that's crazy, bro. Yeah. That's interesting. But overall, you liked your game yesterday?
Yeah. I mean, the difference, what confused me a lot was when they were doing the Let's Go Lakers song. Because I've heard that so many times at the Dodger Stadium that in my head, when they were playing that song, I was like, let's go, Dodgers, let's go. And I know that. Like,
oh, wait.
Yeah. Because yeah. I'm like, they do this song here. And like in my head, it's like,
I wonder if they do let's go, Rams.
No, actually, so now I got to ask you, since that was your first NBA game. Yeah. If you could pick one sporting event to go to, which one would it be?
Ooh, that's a hell of a question.
I think it depends, like, who you're going with.
Yes, bro.
I would say hockey is one.
Oh, yes.
Nah, bro. You had the wrong answer.
I've never been to a hockey game.
Oh, my God, yes.
Why is that wrong answer, Mauricio?
Bro, he's going to say UFC.
Yeah, bro. After watching someone get knocked out, bro.
Actually, yeah.
That's something else, bro. Like, and next, after that, next.
Nah, y'all tripping. Monster trucks.
Next, after that, after you see
a fucking car flip over and burn
UFC,
up.
UFC, it would be basketball because you just have constant action. It's going back and forth.
That's the other thing I told them yesterday is.
But UFC.
Watching the basketball game live. I felt the game was shorter than watching it on TV, especially because you know how you're getting there's like, all right, call the timeout. And now we're going cutting to commercial.
I disagree.
I felt like the game was longer and me watching it on TV than me being there live.
I disagree.
I felt like the game was shorter.
I feel like because I don't know if you heard a comment that I said that it was like, damn, these 4 minutes have been 20 minutes. Mauricio, did I tell you that comment?
Probably told him, yeah.
I told Mauricio that and I was like, damn, it's interesting how at home, it feels like it goes fast. But when you're there, because there's no commentary. You're not seeing commercials. Right. It's like, but I'm glad you enjoyed yourself, bro.
Yeah.
We got our first Laker win. Hopefully. But
that's another event I've been to. I've been to UFC fights with this guy. So that's the thing. It's like I had gone to like every other sport except that one. So I was like, all right, you know, might as well do it.
I need to go to a UFC event. I haven't seen that.
UFC
event. No, a UFC event, dude. Testosterone level.
There
was
an energy level.
It's wild, bro. It's wild.
Yeah. So,
and everybody becomes, well, at least where we went, like everybody becomes friendly, bro. Like you start talking shit and then they start talking shit with you. Like, you start cheering everything, bro. Like,
which fight did you watch?
I watched, my last fight that I watched was Ronda Rousey getting beat.
By who?
You saw that live?
Yeah, by Holly Holm.
Oh, the kick?
No, not Holly Holm. No, sorry.
Amanda Nunes?
Sorry, no. Amanda Nunes, sorry. Sorry. I knew it was one of the Ronda Rousey losses, but I saw, the Amanda Nunes one, because that's when Ronda Rousey just got back, and I think there's all this hype about it, and Amanda Nunes just tore up.
Was that the same night that Brock Lesnar fought?
I don't think so. Because I think the Ronda Rousey was the showcase headline event. Yeah.
Damn.
And so, but no, what's interesting, because you brought up hockey.
You're living in Vegas?
So do you remember that, you know, the Mandalay Bay shooting and everything? Mm. And then the Vegas Knights had that amazing season that got them to the Stanley Cup finals. Mm-hmm. Being in that T-Mobile Arena during
the
that season.
Wild in a hockey game.
Oh, my God.
That was the year after the shooting. The
year after the shooting, yeah. I mean, and it's funny.
Do you think that they do that to, like, because it's interesting how, like, after Katrina, the Orleans.
The Saints
won. You know what I'm saying? Then after, like, wasn't there something for the Rams? Like, no.
No, we're talking about the Astros, remember? That's the year they won when they had their catastrophe.
They had their catastrophe. Then also Black Lives Matter, the whole riots in L.A., then the Rams win it. And then the Dodgers win it.
And then to add on to that, 9/11 and the Patriots.
Wasn't 9/11 and the Yankees, though, actually?
The Yankees won it too, might
I think I believe
been.
So, but I still remember the Patriots coming out like out of the pregame as a team out of the tunnel. And I was like, oh, 9/11, this.
Wasn't that the same year as the Tuck Rule?
I believe so, actually. I believe so. So, yeah, was it skewed? Maybe a little bit. But that does add on to your point. And I do find that peculiar. And I find that...
Conspiracy theory.
Well, you got to think about this, too. And I do want to add on to this, because I had this random thought, and now you just kind of manifested it.
Let's do it.
Who in the fucking Vegas gave a fuck about hockey before that Mandalay Bay shooting and before the the Knights started going hot. Now, mind you, it was like the Knights, I think, first or second year that they were there.
They were there brand new.
It was their debut year.
Right, and even then, for me, I would have never paid attention to hockey had it not been for that shooting and had it not been for the Knights winning. Now the Knights are my team because of what they represented for the Vegas community during that year.
Same for me and Katrina.
And so now it's like, Saints. You're right. It's like, I wonder if there is something behind that because the entire city of Vegas is in love with the Knights. Because
they'd be saying that sports is rigged.
I wouldn't doubt it. I would not doubt it.
I mean, there has to be some part of it.
I mean, do you guys sports bet, right? Or do you guys any guys sports bet at all?
I'm not one to get into, but I've heard a lot about it. I have a lot of friends that
I want you to start this next season, especially NFL, make a couple of bets, get it down to the wire, and start seeing how certain things, like why are you taking a knee? Why are you sliding an inch before the first down line? Why is this ref throwing this penalty right now? Why are they going
for
two?
When you have money on the line.
Bro, you see it when you have money on because you pay
attention. Because you care more.
Because you're watching the spread.
It's your money.
You're watching the spread. Oh, and it's shit. Like, how are these games this close to the spread every single time? How is it this spread is -5?
That's crazy.
And they score a touchdown when they're down by 8. They score a touchdown with 10 seconds left. Like, what?
So Arian Foster was right.
Well, I don't know about to that extreme.
Did you see what he said?
Yeah, that they're practicing the season all the way there. I think that when it gets to that point that, like, all right, so for example, we're going to take it back to my Jags.
Let's get it.
In 2017, when we're up by 10 points against the Patriots with, like, 8 minutes left, all of a sudden I started seeing these calls coming out of nowhere. Oh. And I want you guys to all look up this thing called Miles Jack Wasn't Down because Miles Jack stripped someone that was stripped one of the Patriots on their offensive drive, started carrying the ball, started running down the other way. We're up by 10. We're just going to put us up by 17 and seal the game. But all of a sudden, the refs called a whistle.
Call it back. And right, he was down.
He was down. Nobody touched him. This Miles Jack ran a 4.440. This guy was going to be gone. Right, but then they called a whistle, and it's not like they called a whistle right when he tackled and stripped the ball. They called a whistle as he was getting up and starting to run, and you're like, "What the fuck?" And then
let's watch it here.
Right here, watch this.
He strips him right here.
Just wait.
What the fuck, bro?
Strips him right, then they blow the whistle, and this guy was gone, up by 10 points. This guy was gone.
He wasn't down, bro. That was like simultaneous. You stripping and you getting up.
Yes.
How was he down?
And then, if you also look at right before the first half.
How much money did you have in this game?
Oh, I'd have my life and my heart in this game. This is the Jags in the AFC Championship game.
What?
AFC Championship game.
Was that when they played Philly?
No, they're playing the Patriots.
No. This is when New England went to go play Phily.
Oh, shit.
This is the same year. But I remember that to this day. And then also, there's another thing to this. So on our last drive, Blake Bortles threw this amazing pass. Oh, I forgot the wide receiver to this name. But you see Stephon Gilmore grabbing onto his jersey, pulling him in, and then batting the pass, right? And it was going to be a touchdown to win the game for sure, at least get us into scoring range. But then they didn't call the whistle then. Right before the first half of that game, they called a pass interference on my boy A.J. Bouye when – if you watch NFL, you know corners kind of push. Well, they don't push. They filter the wide receiver out of bounds so that he can't stay inbounds. And they called a penalty on that. The ball was nowhere near catchable. And you're looking at this like, the fuck? And I get it. Who the hell wants to see Blake Bortles and Nick Foles in the Super Bowl? I fucking get it. Right?
You do?
Well, I mean, obviously I do. But I represent a very small.
Valid answer, Enzo.
But that is, you know. Again, being a Jaguars fan, and having to watch the NFL from a very objective standpoint makes you see things that the average, like the delusional Cowboy fans that have always gotten shit their way, even though they only barely make it to the playoffs every year.
Hey, why every is year's that their though? Year, though?
Every year, but I'm saying is, but when you're fed that delusion,
do they need to know. I want to find out. Did the Cowboys win it when JFK was assassinated?
What? No, I don't think so.
That'd be crazy, though, right?
I mean, that's in the 60s. Is that the 60s?
Yeah, 64.
I don't know. I'm not entirely sure.
The football was around in that area, right? And the Super Bowl
But I don't think the Super Bowl was what it is now, you know? True. Like, I don't think sports betting is.
So would you say that these things happen, is it a coincidence or is it a distraction?
I think with sports
is entertaining.
And I think with sports, everyone tries to make a story.
Isn't the NFL also registered like the WWE?
As entertainment.
It's an entertainment business, right?
Right. Right. Right.
Damn. The 1963 Super Bowl was between the New York Giants and the Bears won.
63. What about the 64?
You know, if it's not Cowboys, he's gonna ask for 65.
Nah. He got
one of these years is gonna prove the point.
He got no. Yeah. He got JFK got killed,
and then it's gonna be 66, 67. Which year was the year?
Yeah, yeah. No, with the balloon on the side. With the balloon.
No, it's not. The Cowboys weren't in it though.
He did it. He won it.
They were delusional that year too. Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah.
When did they ever win one? Then
Tony Romo was the best quarterback of all time since '64. You know what I mean? Yeah.
I'm
well,
glad. Bro,
but you know what's so funny? Because like I don't think Cowboys are a bad team by any measure. It's their fans that piss me off every.
They're
single
like
time.
Laker fans. I know.
It's like it's annoying. It is.
Hey, I'm a Laker fan, and I see some of them. So I'm like, man, shut up, bro. You guys just look bad, bro.
Bro, like hey. the amount of Laker fans I hated on LeBron until LeBron got to LA.
Bro,
oh my god, I hated on LeBron until he won the championship against the Warriors. Yeah, that's when I was like,
all
right, bro.
All I'm saying is, I remember there was. The longest time ever that if you were a Kobe fan, by default, you had to hate LeBron.
Facts.
And I never understood that. And I remember to this day, all of those people, because I've been a LeBron fan since, like, because I've always appreciated his game, and I never understood why Kobe fans had this measure to always attack him. And it's literally, that's the only reason why,
you know why
I became
I think
a LeBron
they did
fan.
This, I think people, I was one of those people, and I think the reason why we did this is because the admiration that LeBron got before coming into the league, and then getting that thing that he was going to be better than Jordan or just as good as Jordan,
right.
And getting to see that our guy was getting overlooked is what like pissed us off. And I at least
he's
for
still
me,
still overlooked till this day.
Well, now because look what he's doing, bro. This guy's 20 years in the game.
No. I'm talking about Kobe. Like Kobe, in most people's conversation, he's not even.
But
there.
That's what I'm saying, because LeBron James has surpassed expectations, bro. That now it's like you can't really like not look at LeBron in that light when Kobe's already gone, his career's already over, right? And he did what he got to fourth. LeBron's in the number one spot in the driver's seat as the number one scorer all time. Like you can't top that. And he's got three different rings with three different organizations. Jordan didn't even do that. So that's a lot of bragging rights that I feel like, damn, now he can hold that and be like, yeah, I am the best ever because nobody ever did it like me.
Yeah,
Because before him, it was like Jordan, nobody ever did it like him. And before him, it was Bill Russell, right?
You know what's interesting? It's how you look at the sport. You know, for me, who really appreciate the personnel and the backstories of sports, I can appreciate MJ's like greatness, his presence on the court. I can appreciate Kobe's presence and who he was on the court. And when I am at a game and watching either one of those players, it's black and white different than when LeBron's on the court. You know, LeBron, yeah, absolutely. He's a phenomenal player. His accolades speak for themselves. He's accomplished a lot. But when you're watching a game, you can tell the presence about him that's a lot different than that of Jordan, than that of Kobe. Like we said earlier, Kobe and Jordan commanded a fear. Like, you fear this motherfucker. You know damn well he was going to shove it down your throat and you had to compete.
I make this thought of maybe we felt like that because we were younger and it was intimidating since we were so young when we saw that. And then now that we're older, we've seen LeBron do it. We're like, we're your age,
LeBron,
bro. We
bro,
can see
when
you
have
do
you ever seen LeBron learn a different language just to talk trash?
I mean, that's different. Yeah, and for sure. Kobe is different. MJ didn't do that. MJ never learned a little language. Kobe was raised in Italy. That's why he knows five different languages, bro. Like, he married a Latina on top of that. Like, Kobe is just a different animal, bro.
But
like, that guy right there, that's why he's my favorite all-time
Well, first
player.
Of all, when Jordan was playing, I don't think there was that many foreign players in
exactly.
the league.
Exactly.
What do you mean?
He played with Tony Kukoc.
Yeah, bro. What are you talking about? And then even before that, where was... he played with Jelly Bean Bryant too, bro. And where did he end up? In Italy. So yes, people were coming back and forth from over there
but
already.
Like, for example,
the best.
For example,
what's the guy from the Nets that was the best shooter ever before Curry? He played for the Nets. He had like one of those Mihajlovic last names. He was playing in Europe. He came from Europe, played 2 years on the Nets, and he killed from 3-point line.
What year was that?
And like 85 or 84 or something like that. I forgot his last name.
But what I'm trying to say is that now in the league you have a lot more of that. And on top of that, for example, I think the one that he's talking about specifically is with Tony Parker. Tony Parker, he did learn a little bit of French so he could talk shit to Tony Parker.
Right, I remember that.
You know what I mean? So it's like that is
even when he was retired, he was talking Yugoslavian to Luka, bro. Slovenian. Like, come on.
but
I mean, Kobe's just a different.
But there's also, said, but there's also
he knew how to do the what's his name, the piano shit.
I know it's funny to me because LeBron also gets all this like. There's all these memes when he's like, oh, he supposedly reads, but he's always on the first page and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like, never gets past
he's
the first
not
page.
Floyd Mayweather, guys. He's not Floyd Mayweather. Right?
Yeah, but they're just trying to
bro,
make
I the, like when they ask him questions and then he just bullshits.
Oh, my God.
What were you going to say, Alan?
No, because you talk about the international players, but I argue during Jordan's era, the international players weren't as good as they are now. You know, the NBA think about how dominating those dream teams were in the 90s, and then think about what international basketball is now. It's a completely different competitive game.
There's a whole documentary on how they caught up and were beating USA back-to-back until Kobe.
No, right. And so what I'm saying is, again, kind of like what we were saying earlier, it's kind of hard to compare different eras.
Yeah,
you know, the only
sure.
thing you can really say is during his era, Jordan dominated. And there was a lot of phenomenal teams during those years. Like
that
those
he did not let win a championship.
Those 90s Rockets, those 90s Jazz.
Sonics.
The Sonics. Like, those are legitimate-ass teams. And yeah, look, there's better players now, blah, 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 blah. But you can't make that argument because it's what impact did
it's
you make
Jordan
in your respective era?
The highest out of all of them.
And like, what are you supposed to do? Are you supposed to, like
rings,
all
bro.
Of a sudden, like, make other teams better so you could prove that it's more challenging? Like, you did the best with what was presented with you. You know, he runs 6 championships in 13 years or something like that.
That's
with the Bulls.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And then, yeah, obviously it wasn't just Jordan. He had to have a cast. But you know, if you also think about, too, Jordan's main points were shooting twos. He wasn't shooting threes.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't what he had that mid-range
free throws
game.
Too. Free up.
It was just bizarre.
Yeah, he had a mid-range game.
And the guy is the epitome of changing your game as you age. Like,
right, he was a fly, like high flyer at first, and then he came in, mid range, back to the basket, post up game. Like.
Speaking of which, the trainer for Michael Jordan, Tim Grover,
yep,
he has 2 books out. I forgot what they're called. One's called Winning, and the other one is something of that nature. But he talks about a lot of the mentality that Jordan has
and
everything.
Kobe, because he trained both of them,
bro. Reading those books are very inspirational. Very like it gets you to like kind of what you're saying earlier. Sometimes it's hard to wake up at 5 a.m. to wake up.
Facts.
Well, fuck, dude, I have no other choice because this is what the cost of winning is going to be, and I want to win more than I want.
Almost
lose.
Like that David Goggins effect that he has.
It
he has
really
the same
carry the boat.
He has that same effect for sure.
Absolutely. It's crazy we're talking about Jordan right now too because he's about to sell the team too, or selling a majority
sell the
stake.
Hornets. Yeah.
I mean, what does he have to prove at this point? You know, like, what the hell does he have to prove? He won championships as a player and superseded his presence as a player to the point now he's an owner. Like,
it's crazy because
fucking bizarre.
Like, you're talking about, you know, it takes a cast to win. You know, he didn't do it himself. And it's like, I feel like also when it comes to building this type of, like, an organization and all that type of stuff, it doesn't just take you as an owner. It takes you, like, putting the right pieces in place. And I think that's why, like, the owner of, like, Jerry Buss gets admired so much because, you know, what he was able to accomplish with the Lakers. And to know, like, for example, all the details we've gotten to know about the Lakers organization.
Right.
And that they were, like, losing money, you know, like, all this type of stuff that they did. And they still are, like, arguably one of the number one franchises in the world. It's pretty incredible. So it's, like, it's another challenge for someone like Jordan to take on and you know, put that culture and everything into a whole organization. It's different as a player than it is.
Kind of to, like, wrap this up. Who do you got in April, Tank or Ryan Garcia?
Oh, dude, I don't have an opinion on fighting.
On boxing?
No, none whatsoever.
Just pick a name.
Ooh. I've heard a lot about Ryan Garcia, so I'm going to go with him.
Wow, okay.
Heard a lot about
the underdog.
Him.
All right. Who do you guys got in that fight?
Ryan Garcia.
Tank, bro.
I got Tank, too. But dang, you got Ryan Garcia, too. What is you?
I've been telling you this.
Wow. All right. Well, guys, appreciate y'all.
Wait. Whoa, boxing. What about UFC? You don't watch
it? I don't watch that either. I'll go to an event, but okay. I don't pay attention to it too much. Like, nah.
All right. Yeah, man. That was interesting because we just had an event that happened in London this weekend. You know, the guy was going, and I think what the record was 3-11, trying to get your title back.
Oh, wow.
And Kamaru Usman was trying to get his title back, and, you know, he wasn't able to do it.
That book by Tim Grover, Relentless, right?
Relentless, yep, bro. Right. I listened to that shit.
And
that's what I like about audiobooks.
What I want to ask you about this is that, okay, so his previous fight, he got knocked out.
Okay.
He was a champion, had dominated the division, all that type of stuff. As an athlete, when you go through, like, some kind of, like, you've played sports and all that type of stuff, so this is why I'm asking you this. When you go through some kind of a loss, how does that affect your mental state? you know, you compete as well. So like, mm-hmm. if you feel like you fell short from your goal or anything like that, how does that affect your mental state going into the next competition or, you know, type of thing?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think losing presents you with an opportunity to be better. You know, it presents you an opportunity to appreciate where you're at, and it more often than not spurns the motivation and the inspiration you need to actually get over that hump, you know? Like for me, for example, like I'll just show them the picture of what it was like for my first competition and what I look like now. I could definitely tell you, every time I lift, every time I go out and work out, I think of what it felt like to come in fifth place. I think about what it felt like to come in fourth place. And like, dude, I fucking hate this feeling. And I can imagine when you're getting paid way more millions of dollars to do that, that I mean so much more. And I don't know of any man that has real assertive goals that actually enjoys losing and that will stay in that state of loss.
Facts. That bounce back effect, man. We always bouncing back.
And if you don't, well, there's a reason why, you know, some things are made for men and some things are meant to be left for boys. Straight the fuck up.
That's fucking facts right there, man. Good night, people.
Is that it? Leave it out.